Rudy.com.
It's time for the most knowledgeable and informative show based around the world of professional wrestling.
Thought we weren't supposed to use that word anymore.
OWW Radio, with your host, Mr. Personality, Alan Wojcik.
It's not my fault I happen to be charismatic.
Along with the loudmouth assassin, the Spud Guy.
I just act that way to get chicks, dumbass.
The resident Aussie, Mace.
I am not gonna lie to these people just because it makes them feel good.
Guest starring Kevin Scott as Jamal.
What it is, my nizzles, I got chili for shizzle!
What? It's time for OWW Radio, live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. Our phone number each and every week is 267-297-1397. If you're part of Skype, which may or may not be fun tonight, thanks to our friends at MSN who are in the process of buying them, you need to type Sir Rockin', add them to your friend list, and you can be on the show. If you're expecting WWE former world champion and UFC star Brock Lesnar. He was supposed to be here, however, due to Laura Connors, the publicist for HarperCollins Publishing, we received an email at 3:55 today that due to an unexpected conflict, Brock's unable to do the show this evening. She's very sorry for the last minute notice, and she'll be in touch with us to reschedule. We're guessing, contemplating, maybe a weather issue. I don't know. I'm indifferent to it because I got the original guest I wanted for this show tonight. And he is someone that is part of one of the, if you're a DVD wrestling fan, you have heard of Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. If you haven't, then you need to surrender a Wrestling Man card right now. Pro Wrestling Guerrilla is the home of some of the most amazing named shows that we'll talk about. The main reason we're going to talk with them tonight is because it is All-Star Weekend 8 taking place this Friday and Saturday at the American Legion Hall number 308. It is at 7338 Canby Avenue in Reseda, California. We've got a man who has held the NWA World Tag Team titles and is one of the main driving forces of PWG. And a big L.A. Angels of Anaheim fan, Mr. Joey Ryan, is here tonight. Thanks for taking time on your way to the game. How are we doing tonight?
Brock Lesnar not on the show? That's why I'm here. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm leaving.
Wait, what?
I mean, that's what everyone's tuning in for. Brock Lesnar, not Joey Ryan, right?
They're tuning in for you. This is a double main event.
Oh, okay, double main event. Well, then I guess
you
I
were billed as a.
I just take this opportunity to show some stuff to some Brock Lesnar fans, right? Like ProWrestlingGorilla.com or NWAHollywood.com.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah, on my Twitter, it is. Joey Ryan Online.
Oh, yeah. If you've never been...
Show some stuff to Brock Lesnar fans.
Absolutely. For fans that aren't aware of it, as that this promotion has a great history to it, take us back in time, because you've been a fixture of the Southern California wrestling scene as long as I can remember, from when I met SoCal Val when she moved here to Florida, and she told me one of the tag teams I gotta see if I ever YouTube is Scott Lost, Joey Ryan, and you need to look up at this Disco Machine guy, and there's another guy called Human Tornado, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Take the fans down memory lane for a moment here. What was the genesis of starting Pro Wrestling Guerrilla?
Pro Wrestling Guerrilla actually was, so there was six of us who all kind of came from different backgrounds. Well, kind of two major ones, like, you know, Scott Lawson and I came up from the UPW, like, you know, brand of, you know, the WWE developmental system, and Super Dragon and Top Gun Talwar and Excalibur and Disco Machine were kind of, they came up through Rev Pro, and which is more like Lucha or Japanese influence. And then, you know, so we were doing like shows together, like these guys that were, you know, promoters would come along and, you know, try to do these like hybrid shows of like all the talent in the area, but like they weren't very experienced at promoting, and that's not a knock to them. It's just not something that everybody can do. And, so we kind of watched them make their mistakes and kind of fall apart. So we just said, well, why don't we just do something ourselves? And we just kind of, the six of us just decided, hey, let's run a show, like, you know, a promoterless show, just a show for the boys by the boys. And then it just, I don't know, it just clicked and went on from there.
Yeah. Are you fine with the label of being an internet darling, so to speak? Because you kind of fall into the label that ROH has had for years, that you guys are majority a DVD-only company. Have you guys dabbled in iPay-per-view yet? Have you thought of it?
No, I don't know if that would really make sense for us, because we're not... I mean, we're not really trying to get bigger than we are. I mean, we kind of like being able to, you know, maintain what we have, and we don't do anything that's too risky to, you know, our system, just because we want to keep being able to do shows, and, you know, we don't, like I said, we're not too, like, eager, like, we're not looking for, like, TV or, you know, pay-per-view or even, you know, anything bigger than the venue we run in. We just want to be able to consistently put on good shows, and we don't want to, like, you know, we have to put more money towards production, so that means we can't bring in somebody that, you know, our audience would like, so... You know, we kind of keep it simple just so we can, I mean, not simple, but we keep it to what we know, to what we're good at, so that way we don't get out of our league and end up, you know, causing the shows to be less stellar than they are.
Yeah. Explain, I had the privilege of seeing you perform in the wrestling ring on numerous occasions, be it here in Florida for the Jeff Peters Memorial Cup, or when you were on Wrestling Society X, the unfortunately short-lived MTV show, or the NWA Wrestling from Hollywood. Explain to fans the genesis of the Joey Magnum Ryan character if they've never seen you, or even if they have seen you, and they're sitting there going, where the heck did he come up with that?
Well, I grew up watching wrestling, and obviously, like most people who get into it, and you know, I just basically was watching tapes, you know, like, you know, back when VHS was still relative, I watched a lot of tapes from the 80s and coming up and watching guys from the 80s, and I looked at their look and their style, and what would be considered cool and like a baby face then would, if you saw someone that like that nowadays, would be like, you know, really raunchy or sleazy, and it's just a matter of time, you know. And so I just kind of decided that I would portray an 80s babyface look and just act almost like a babyface of, you know, the 80s and tweak it a little bit, and it would be probably a huge heel of today. And so it just kind of started almost like a joke, not a joke, just something like that, like, you know, when I was shaving one day, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm going to leave a mustache. And I'm like, I'm going to stop shaving my chest. And I'm just going to, you know, it just kind of turned into something that caught on. And I just, you know, made a lot of money with it. So I'm happy it did.
Take us through an average day when you're doing Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. Say something like Battle of Los Angeles, which is a humongous event. If fans have never been to one, I'm not talking about the movie, which was pretty good. I'm talking about a multi-day tournament. How long in advance do you set up the Battle of LA and the process of picking folks? Because I've seen what the NWA, IPW Hardcore did. Like, when you and Human Tornado came in for the Peterson Cup, I saw what they went through in booking it, but I'm curious, who handles what in the PWG office for that event of that massive power?
Well, I mean, you know, over the last 8 years or so, since we started, you know, people have worn different hats and stuff. But what it's come down to, really, and I'm, you know, I'm not, you know, just saying this or anything, but like, I don't really do much in the PWG office anymore. It's a lot of Super Dragon and Excalibur, because, you know, like, they're no longer wrestling, but they're still within the promotion. And, you know, like, you know, Scott Lost stopped wrestling and Top Gun Tallware stopped wrestling and Disco Machine wrestled very rarely and they've kind of stepped away from PWG altogether, as opposed to Excalibur and Super Dragon, who are still very much part of the company. And they pretty much do all the booking, all the planning, all the organization. And I'm more, I would have to say, like, more like talent relations in a way where, like, I, you know, like, I deal with a lot of the local guys because I'm you know, invested in and inside the local scene more than they are. And, you know, and I, when I work outside the state, you know, like, guys that might be, you know, worthy of bringing in, you know, I kind of keep my eye open for stuff like that. And I suggest to them, but then it's ultimately their decision because they're the ones doing the finances, they're the ones doing the bookings, they're the ones doing, you know, all the production. So it's really, it's really like a two-man operation, and I'm kind of, like I said, more or less just kind of talent relations now.
As I mentioned to the fans, this promotion has some of the more interesting names ever. I was exposed to it from Frankie Kazarian working for you guys, and then I met you at the Peterson Cup when you were here. I want to take the fans through some of the more interesting names for these events. How did Kurt Russell Mania come to be, and did you ever get a call from his folks or Goldie Hawn's folks going, so, yeah, money for royalties, please?
No, well, we did get a call. It wasn't from their people, because if you notice now, Kurt Russell Reunion and not Kurt Russell Mania, which should suggest who we got the call from. But that being said, it's just, you know, what we do in wrestling is, you know, what I like to do is, you know, like, what it is, it's my creative outlet. You know, like, I get to be, you know, I get to tell any story I want. I get to be any character I want. I get to, you know, it's like a painter painting a picture or a writer writing a story, but it's live action. It's what I do. And, you know, Excalibur, who's really, a really smart guy and really creative and uses whether it's come up with names or writing, you know, press releases or whatever, he uses that as his creative outlet towards wrestling. So he still finds his way to get his creative outlet out. And, he just, you know, comes up with these things. Like, sometimes he'll take suggestions from us, the rest of us. Other times he'll just do it on his own. And he's, you know, he's a very funny guy and he is very creative and comes up with all that stuff.
Especially, I'm on the website right now, fans. If you want to go, it's prowrestlinggorilla.com. Put two G's, one G at the end of wrestling and then a G in front of it. There's some amazing names for shows such as After School Special, Card Subject to Change, which I believe has become a repeat event. I got to see the European Vacation DVDs for Germany and England. What's your personal favorite of all the names that you guys have used? Is it like Enchantment Under the Sea Dance for you or Teen Outreach Summit? What's your favorite name?
I've been allowed to, name a couple ideas. The first time we did Double Shot in 2004, I decided, cause I really like Up in Roses, we use Your Illusion 3 and 4 for those names. I suggested, Secret of the Ooze, which obviously is a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles reference. Just a couple, you know, just lately it's been more Excalibur than anybody else, but he's always open to suggestions but I'm kind of partial to the ones that I helped come up with or I, you know, had a hand in naming.
Joey Ryan is joining us here on All I Will of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. As I mentioned, you are a former NWA World Tag Team Champion, I believe, holding the belts with Carl Machine Gun Anderson, if I have his name pronounced correctly.
Yes.
What was your initial reaction when you got involved with the NWA and at some point they tell you, okay, so the belts at Rock and Roll Express, Arn and Tully, the Road Warriors, Midnight Express, all these cats, you're going to win them and you're going to get to represent our company?
Well, I mean, like, obviously, like anybody, you know, it's a huge, was a great moment for me being associated with those names. I'm really happy with that I was able to do with Carl Machine Gun Anderson, who's the best tag team partner I've ever had. He's just so solid in the ring, and you know, his success in Japan has proven that. But yeah, it was just, you know, when I got involved, I was actually training with American Dragon Daniel Bryan now at the New Japan Dojo, and Rocky Romero was there, and TJ Perkins was there, and you at the one in Santa Monica, their USA Dojo, and the NW and the Dojo got involved with Dave Marquez and the NWA and kind of joined together, and so they started seeing the guys that were training there and then using them on the shows, and that's kind of how that happened. And then Carl Anderson moved out here from Cincinnati, and you know, they just kind of saw him as an Arn Anderson type and me as a Tully Blanchard type, and they just said that it would make perfect sense to put us together. And you know, we just clicked right away. We had tons of chemistry. Like, we became best friends outside the ring, and just it just worked. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, it's just there's no work behind it, because it was just natural.
Yeah. Was it just a natural genesis in your mind when David Marquez and everyone set up the NWA wrestling from Hollywood? Was it a natural for you to hop in on that, or did you have to be talked into the idea?
No, Dave, you know, David and I, we have, as much as we have in common, as much as we like the same things, we're also very different. And so we were going back and forth, because when the idea first came up, Adam Pearce was still, who's, you know, normally Dave's right-hand guy, was still booking for Ring of Honor. And so Dave said, you know, I know I'm going to need your help on this. Is that, you know, can you help me out with this? Because, you know, you know the talent better than I do. And I said, yeah, you know. And so we started coming up with ideas, and then Adam parted ways with Ring of Honor. And so naturally Adam came on board, and I said, you know, Adam's got experience doing this. If we've got to get it off the ground, we need to let Adam be, you know, the backstage guy. We need him to let him, you know, run the shows, be the booker or whatever. And and Adam's very hands on, but then Adam has got family, you know, he's got a lot of stuff going on in the family, and he asked, after, you know, I forget how many months we were on the air, he asked if I could take over, and he kind of held my hand along to get to the booking style or how to book a TV show. And so and so now I help out with that, but I'm a lot less hands-on than Adam is. Like, he, you know, Adam's a perfectionist, and that's, you know, to his credit, he gets very passionate about that. I'm more like, you know, I want to see, because, you know, I want to use everybody's wrestling minds, and so I want to hear your ideas. You tell me what you think your character would do, because you're more invested in your character than I am. So you tell me what your character would do, and I'll try to write it that way. And, you know, sometimes it works out. Sometimes there has to be some negotiating and some bargaining, some common ground found. But for the most part, I let the guys handle their own stuff as long as I can write it where it makes sense. And so it just kind of, you know, as a performer and as a producer now, it's given me so many challenges and opportunities. And it's another way for me to, you know, use my creativity that, you know, just a different way for me to grow, not only as a wrestler, but, you know, as a producer or production or backstage office guy.
Joey Ryan is a guest here from Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. The event is All-Star Weekend 8. It's this Friday and Saturday in Reseda, California. We've got someone on the line who wants to talk to you. Hey, Randy, welcome to the show.
Hello. Joey Ryan, I have a question for you. I wanted to know, since both nights for All-Star Weekend, you're tag team again with Scorpio Sky, and that got me wondering, who has been your favorite person to tag team with? Finally got it.
Well, other than Anderson, is Scorpio
there's
people?
There's been a lot. There's, well, Joey could probably say Anderson, Scott Loss, Disco, well, a lot of anybody who was in the Dynasty when it was.
Oh, Disco Machine, man. Nothing beats seeing you guys on the rest of Society X, forcing the ref to hold the disco ball.
Yeah, all those guys, like, everybody brings someone else to the table. My personal favorite is Carl Anderson, just because we are such good friends outside the ring. It's, like I said, it wasn't work. It was just like going in and, you know, being ourselves and just clicking naturally, because, you know, as fans, everybody can see when something's being forced and when something's not being forced, as the wrestlers can. And, you know, when two guys are teaming that don't want to team, I think or don't have any chemistry, I think the audience knows right away, like, they're smarter than, you know, some promoters give them credit for. But I think with Carl Anderson and I, people could tell we were having fun. We were liking teaming and we had good chemistry together. I think probably, work rate wise, I think the best partner I've had is Scott Loss, because he was able to, you know, he carries a heavy workload. His style is so unique and so special that just being on the apron, getting to watch him do his thing, you know, just really was really awe inspiring to me. And then Disco, you know, Disco was just, because that's WSX was a cartoon. We were, you know, it basically was a real life cartoon, and I couldn't have a better partner to be a cartoon with than Disco Machine. And so, like, I don't think there'd be another partner I could have had, you know, had it been as successful with in that show than Disco Machine. So just like everybody brought something else different to what aspect of the wrestling we were doing.
Hmm. Oh, and also, I've noticed in NWA Hollywood that it's been interesting how, like, some of the wrestlers play or are different than what they're known for, it seems like. Like, I've seen Alice in Danger plays the bad girl in there. Candice LeRae, who I've seen. I don't think I've ever seen her play heel until then. Portia Perez and stuff. Have you noticed that it's kind of like, almost like a bizarro world in a way in terms of indie wrestling?
I think it's just, it's not that the TV ignores what happens in the, because we, you know, on NWA, we reference stuff that happens outside of NWA a lot. We're not like WWE or TNA, where like the rest of the wrestling world doesn't exist. I mean, unless WWE refers to it as the minor leagues or whatever. We reference a lot of stuff, but we all have to take into consideration who's going to be a regular on the show and then how's that going to, like, for instance, like with a Candice LeRae, she's more experienced than a lot of the other girls, like Davina Rose or Buggy that we use. And so you kind of want her in the driver's seat of these matches. And it just makes more sense character-wise to if we're going to be using someone consistently, to put them in a position where they're going to succeed or help the promotion succeed or the television show succeed.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Randy. We really appreciate that. Jersey Girl in our chat room wants to know, I looked up your profile on worldofwrestling.com and noticed you did some stuff for WWE. What is that backstage experience like for someone for their first time in the industry going to that?
Well, first time is very nerve-wracking. Like, you know, there's a huge difference between me going backstage in 2005 when the first time I did it and me going backstage now in 2011, where I know and have worked with half the roster, and even like the backstage office guys know who I am. So when I first went there, obviously you're kind of walking on eggshells. You don't want to make the wrong move, say the wrong thing. You want to be as professional as possible. Now it's a little less nerve-wracking because, you know, I've been there so many times, and I know all the guys. So, you know, I'm more comfortable sitting in on conversations or talking to people or just, you know, kind of being one of the boys rather than like this nervous indie kid that, you know, doesn't want to do the wrong thing. It's just like, it's almost just like any other, wrestling locker room, except, you know, the multi-million-dollar production that's going on. But as far as I'm concerned, I try to put that out of my head that, you know, how much, you know, how big the thing is and just kind of be one of the boys with the boys, because I think that's going to be, you know, what sets your comfort level, and that's what's going to get you invited back, is when you don't stick out like a sore thumb. I mean, you kind of want to stand out. You do want to stand out if you're trying to get a job there, but if you just kind of want to, you know, be one of the boys, then you got to be one of the boys and you got to just be comfortable, because if you're awkward, you're not going to be invited back.
Yeah. Now, take that from your experience. You were here in Florida for the 06 Peterson Cup, I believe. I think you went that whole weekend, was revolved around Slammiversary. What was that experience like for you to be at the TNA event? Because at that point, there was no Russo. Russo was kind of there. There was no Hogan. There was no Bischoff. And there was actually wrestling going on in Orlando.
At that point, I'd known a lot of those guys from PWG because they, you know, the TNA books got their guys outside of their promotion. So, you know, like Sabin and Shelly and AJ and Daniels and stuff, they had all worked through PWG. So I know a lot of their guys. I'm also, I know Terry Taylor, who, you know, through various outlets of wrestling. And so, that's kind of, Terry's actually the one who made the okay to come hang out. And, it's different, but it's the same. You know, like, everybody's, you know, if when you're with the boys, you're one of the boys. But like, there's a TV show, there's a production going on. You don't want to get in the way. You want to, you know, you want to be friendly. You don't want to be awkward, but you don't want to get in the way of them producing their TV show, so, or their pay-per-view, as it were. So, you know, you just kind of got to learn where you fit in and where you don't fit in, and just kind of you know, be respectful of what your surroundings.
When I pitched you the idea of being on here, I told you, I said, how would you like to audition for Steve Corino's role? Because for fans that aren't aware of it, the King of Old School, Steve Corino, kind of has taken the ambassador role of being our Online World of Wrestling Major League Baseball analyst. And I've known Joey for a while, and he's like, oh, heck, I want that job. I was like, okay, cool. So we'll do an audition here. We're already into close to the Memorial Day. Part of Major League Baseball. In your eyes, what's the biggest surprise for you? Is it the Cleveland Indians being where they are? Is it the logjam in the AL West? What's the biggest surprise for Joey Ryan right now?
Gosh, that's a good question. I mean, obviously, a lot of people didn't expect the Indians to be doing as well as they are, but, you know, if you look at, you know, the AL Central, I think, you know, in the offseason, I think it was anybody's division to win. I mean, I think the AL West is anybody's division to win. I think more surprising than not is the way that everybody expected the Red Sox and the Phillies to run away in their divisions, and those divisions are tight. You know, everybody saw the additions the Red Sox made, and for them to just, you know, that's expected World Series of the Phillies and Red Sox, but they're being very competitive inside their own division. So I think the way that, you know, the way that the baseball is going now is you never know who, like, the teams with the stacked rosters and the lineups and the expenses, like the Yankees, you know, they're the second place team or third place team right now. You know, and the people who stack their rosters and spend the most money aren't always going to be out on top. And that's what's great is that the, you know, how much money did the Tampa Bay Rays cut off their roster, but yet they're still in first place or tied for first place right now. So, you know, you just, I like the way that all the divisions are tight. I like the fact that nobody's running away with anything. And if anybody's running away with it, it's the Indians, who was the unexpected one.
When you look at this setup right now, as I outlined to the fans, you're on your way to tonight's game with the LA Angels of Anaheim. That division alone, from top to bottom, there's three games in there. You go to the AL East, and everybody from the Yankees down to Baltimore are packed within 3.5. And I know it's late May, but it's just amazing to look at this, especially as you said, I'm a diehard Yankee fan and I'm pretty happy where I am right now. But come July, does any of these teams that you see that are mid-level, like Detroit is 7 out, you guys, even though you're a half game out, if you go to the National League, the Mets are 6.5 out, but with ownership issues, which we'll talk in a second about, who do you see if they're in striking distance before the trade deadline has to make a move, or is it just going to be the traditional, the Yankees, the Sox, the Phillies, the Braves, the heavy hitters load up and rip off everyone else in the league?
That's another good question with the division being so close, is that, you know, like, Seattle, like, you know, everyone's thinking that, okay, Seattle's gonna, you know, some people are gonna be going after Felix Hernandez from Seattle, but Seattle's right in it too. They're only, I think, three games out, so, you know, Seattle's not about to give up their number one pitcher, so, I mean, I don't even know if they would have before, maybe for the right offer, but it's hard to tell. You know, you gotta look at the teams that are rebuilding, like the Blue Jays might, if they have anything left to offer, you know, might want to unload somebody, or a contract or two, but it's still early, like you pointed out. So a month from now, who knows? Who knows if these teams that are starting hot or slumping won't turn it around or start slumping. And, you know, it's, like I said, it's still very early. Like from my team, the Angels, I don't know what to expect because we have so many rookies playing this year. You know, we have one of our starting catchers is a rookie. We have a starting pitcher who's a rookie. Our closer is a rookie. We have, you know, our center fielder is a second year guy. You know, our first baseman's a rookie. So like, you don't know if they're going to heat up or if they're going to slow down, you know, so it's hard to tell. It's hard to predict. You know, when we get into, like June, we're definitely going to see like what teams are here to stay and what teams are going to kind of fall off the end.
Yeah, our executive producer, Sir Rockin, who handles the tech board here, is a diehard Phillies fan. And when their starting four showed up in the pitching roster and they won, they got Cliff Lee, and he's like, we're going to murder everybody. Do you still think is he right in that aspect? I mean, they're 29 and 18 as we sit here, and you know, the Marlins are within strike. Everyone in that division, even the Nationals, are in striking distance. Can these four arms in Philly, and if Jamie Moyer comes back from being on ESPN with his injuries, are they the ones? If you were a betting person, and I'm not saying you are or you're not, are they a team that you, if you're at the table, you pick as your NL team, or is there someone else do you think can get it towards the end of the year?
I mean. Obviously, San Francisco still has the great pitching that took them to the World Series last year, but you know it's hard to bet against Philadelphia because those guys, although it's they haven't been perfect this year, they're still proven to be strong the entire year. A lot of times pitchers starting rotations they kind of start to fall off towards the end of the year because their arms get tired or they get injured or whatever. But those guys are pretty proven, so. It's hard to bet against them. It's hard to bet against the Cliff Lee or Roy Halladay. But if anybody, it seems like more than ever this year, there's a lot of one-run games, a lot of 1-0, 2-1 wins, 3-2 wins. So I think pitching's going to be another part, another strong, the strong pitching staff's going to be what leads the team to the World Series. And, if anybody's pitching staff can compete in the NL, it'd probably be San Francisco Giants, as they proved last year.
Would you ever consider growing that beard that Wilson's got as a performer in the ring? Would you ever think,
I had a pretty long beard in 2007 when I went to Australia for a little while, and I let it grow out pretty long. I didn't dye it like he did, which is what gives it his unique look. But it was pretty there. I mean, I grew pretty decent facial hair, so.
Your franchise has great ownership and a great location. The park's been redone. When you see teams like here in Tampa Bay and over in Miami where they took down what was the Orange Bowl and are putting in this multi-million-dollar stadium, does it make you cringe that a lot of these franchises could possibly be, I mean, would they talk contraction years ago with the Twins possibly in Tampa Bay? And of course the Twins have that brand new ballpark. As a fan, does that bother you, or should that be a situation that goes on? If you can't get people's butts into a stadium, I mean, they're drawing 10,000 here in Tampa Bay when Toronto or Baltimore come in, but they're packing them in for the Yankees, the Sox, when the Angels come in. What's your stance on the situation? I know I threw a lot at you there.
I'm obviously, I don't know the money issues or the business decisions of it. I don't know what the implications are. If they can't make money there, then if they can't make enough money to make the teams competitive, then they might, I'm okay with them considering, but I don't look at the financial aspects of anything. Like, I look at it like a fan. I just want the competition. So I guess if it's going to help competition, then I'm okay with it. But, in Los Angeles, being in Los Angeles, area, there's I'm like the only person that was born and raised in Los Angeles that I know. So everybody's coming from somewhere else. And so, half the times you go to games, 50% of the audience is for the away team because that's where they're from, And so I'm kind of, I think it helps the draw of the teams here because, everybody wants to see their home team play. But, I'm not too familiar, I don't have to deal with, poor draws or, anything like that in this area I just want to see competition.
If you were offered the 25% of ownership that the Wilpons have been pimping out to everybody to save the Mets, who I believe there was an article in Sports Illustrated that Wilpon was saying they're behind with, they're going to lose this amount of money from the Bernie Madoff deal. Is there anybody stupid enough to go, yeah, you can have all my money and I'll never be able to get jack crap from it?
I mean, some people have that kind of money to burn. Like, if I had a ton of money and nothing to do with it, like, you know, like, I'd either spend it on baseball. I mean, better than spending it on drugs or something, right? I mean, well, I guess it depends on who you are. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's people who, I mean, there are people who think large amounts of money is into wrestling promotions that never make money, none shall be named. But, you know, so there are people who have money to blow.
The event is, as I mentioned, and I will one more time because we're going to let Joe go because he's got tickets and he wants to get there and get his hot dog groove on. It is All-Star Weekend 8. It's Friday and Saturday. The same building, American Legion Hall 308. It's 7338 Canby Avenue in Reseda. Night one main event is the PWG World Champion, Claudio Castagnoli, taking on your hero, my hero, the Chris Hero. Also on that show is Joey in a tag team matchup, taking on the Fighting Taylor Boys. Kevin Steen is there, El Generico. One of my favorite tag teams, Austin Aries and Roderick Strong will be there on both nights. Kenny King will be there. Eddie Edwards, the ROH World Champion, will be there. Akira Tozawa, wow. This is a stacked card. Oh, wow, night one also has Low-Key versus Alex Shelley. So get your tickets now if you can. If you can't, go to ProWrestlingGorilla.com. They have an amazing array of DVDs. So thank you for stopping by and enjoy the game. Hopefully you have good weather, good seats, and not crazy fans.
Thank you. I just want to take one more second because I do want to plug not only the ProWrestling Gorilla website, but the NWA Hollywood website, nwahollywood.com. You can watch all the episodes of the television show on the website. It's still a work in progress. We're still trying to grow, but as wrestling fans know, the more competition, the more work goes around, the less companies get, you know, like stale, hopefully it'll help competition. We're nowhere near competing with anybody yet, but who knows, you know, who knows what is held around the corner. We're trying our best, so if you can support us, that'd be awesome. And, you know, obviously keep buying those PWG DVDs. And, you know, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, so if you want to look me up, you know, I'm very accessible to the fans. So that's about it.
All right, enjoy the game. Coming up after the break, we will get into everything with the sale of Ring of Honor. We will talk all the fun of WWE and TNA, and we will have our own Macho Man Randy Savage tribute way a little better than what they did on Monday Night Raw. So stay with us. Coming up after the break, all on World of Wrestling Radio.
Professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene. All this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talent. today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Barry. Janice Michelle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Vance, the Boogie Woogerman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling. Online. It's the site of the pro juice. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
I hear voices in my head. They counsel me. They understand. They talk to me.
Since 1996, Audio Wrestling has been getting in the ring as your definitive source for all your wrestling desires.
Interviews with some of pro wrestling's biggest stars.
Providing you with a wide selection of award-winning wrestling shows from past and present. Such as
Ministry of Slam,
Monday Night Mayhem,
In Your Head,
WrestleCast,
Sunday Night Showdown,
Wrestling News Live,
Between the Ropes,
RVD Radio,
WrestleCast,
and Wrestle Talk Radio,
and many others.
If you can't get enough Mad Mania, climb into the ring with
Audio Wrestling.
www.audio.com.
Keeping you tuned in
since 1996.
Do you have a certain passion? Maybe you're a geek, a wrestling fan, a sex enthusiast, or you just need something to do for the evening. Then come check out the Wild Talk Radio Network, providing you with the latest in online entertainment. Whether it's getting in the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio, or getting a little R-rated with CB Radio or Anything Goes, or whether you just want to play a game of Dungeons & Dragons with the geeks over to Talk We Talk Live, all you gotta do is head on over to www.wildtalkradio.com and check out all of our daily programming. Wild Talk Radio Network. Come and get wild with us.
I'm Al Snow, former WWE superstar, tough enough trainer, and just all around gadabout. When I want to talk or I want to listen to someone else talk, I go to wildtalkradio.com.
Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. Thanks to Joey Magnum Ryan of Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and also NWA Wrestling from Hollywood. He's got some great seats for his game with the LA Angels of Anaheim. The Spud Guy will be joining us any moment now. You apparently have breaking... Are you physically breaking the news right now?
I have breaking news.
Oh, goodness. What's your
news? I have
news?
Absolute breaking news. It is true... It happens. Alan Wojcik can show emotion. I'm looking at his Facebook profile right now, and
oh,
he
Lord.
Is gasp smiling in a picture.
Yeah, it's scary, ain't it? Yes, can be done. That was Halloween, the first Halloween that Misty and I were together. I got to end up meeting a lot of her relatives at that party. Very weird.
By the way, I like the pink onesie that says, I am not a boy.
Yep, very that cute. Was that was one we got for
I'm
Adam.
Sure that looks great on you, Alan.
Looks really great. Looked really great on my daughter when she was a newborn.
God
we
damn
will
it,
be,
I hate you.
Yeah. We will be joined at 10 o'clock Eastern by both Brian Shields, the co-author of the WWE Encyclopedia, which is a must grab if you are a professional wrestling fan. Yes, we can say those words here because we're not out of Stamford, Connecticut. Graham Cawthon, the curator of historyofwwe.com, will be here. They will join us, possibly Kevin Scott. Jamal was here last week. He may make an appearance again this week.
I missed Jamal.
Yep, Jamal and Phil Strom were here last week, and they had a lot of fun with us. The Mace guy is, unfortunately, a part of the Australian government as we speak, or at least close to being a part of it. So he will not be here this week, and he actually may not be here ever again if his job works out for him, so we wish him the best. A lot of stuff happened over the weekend, and I said we will get into everything with the passing of the Macho Man Randy Savage. We had a interesting weekend also, thanks to Ring of Honor. If you're a fan of Ring of Honor, going back to day one, when Gabe Sapolsky and Rob Feinstein and Doug Gentry, Kerry Silken is now in charge there, and they have apparently sold the promotion. It has been sold to the Sinclair Broadcast Group. They are one of the largest broadcasters in the United States. They own and operate 58 television stations in 35 markets across the U.S., including here in Tampa Bay. We'll barrel off a couple seconds here where they're going to be going with this. They actually just celebrated their 9th anniversary, which is amazing. In a press release, Kerry Silken said that we've been waiting for and working for this opportunity for quite some time, and of our 9 years in the business, there has been no better roster of wrestlers than this one to expose the ROH product to the masses. With Sinclair's resources and many avenues of distribution, we believe many new fans around the world will be as captivated as those who have followed ROH over the years. Their new TV deal, which HDNet lapsed, if fans remember back, the month of September will see the debut of a new ROH television program syndicated across the Sinclair network of stations. They have dropped Mike Hodgegood, their announcer, who took Lenny Leonard's place. So he's back doing his ACC stuff. Dave Prazak will stay. Also staying is a lot of the front office, like Sid Eck, Ross Abrams. Delirious will still be involved in the matchmaking. Jim Cornette will be staying around. Ring announcer Bobby Cruz. Longtime announcer Kevin Kelly, who's been doing the ROH iPay-per-views, will be assuming the play-by-play chair. So that'll definitely be interesting. They've actually got a lot of interesting stuff going on. We're going to try to be a part of this press conference that's going to be open to the media on June 24th in Baltimore. That event's going to feature a number of ROH staff and wrestlers. They're apparently also going to be doing some projects like the Battle of the Belts, which goes back to the championship wrestling from Florida days of the 1980s. And that'll also kick off a weekend for the Best in the World iPay-per-view event, which is Sunday, June 26th. Here's some of the markets if you're a fan of the product and you're going, I really enjoyed them on TV. Tampa's going to have it on WTTA Channel 38. Minneapolis, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Raleigh, North Carolina, Nashville, Cincinnati will be getting it on WSTR Channel 64. We've got Milwaukee, we've got the Carolinas area, San Antonio, Birmingham, Alabama, Norfolk, Virginia, Las Vegas, Oklahoma City, Greensboro, Buffalo, Mobile, Cape Girardeau, Syracuse, and Charleston, South Carolina. Damn, I sound like Ric Flair when he was running around with the championship. Is this weird to you for someone who is been in the industry and followed the industry for a long time, and if Sorokin wants to chime in as well, this isn't the first time a TV network has gotten involved. I'd like to show you World Championship Wrestling in the graveyard that they're to our left here. But it looks like this is possibly being handled a lot different, as opposed to accountants walking in from over across the Turner Plaza, the CNN Plaza, going, we know what we're doing. We'll take this from you guys. As noted in this press release, Kerry Silkin is staying. Delirious has still got the book. Jim Cornette's not going anywhere. If you're an ROH fan, is this any kind of comfort to you?
Yeah. Because that means the product will stay the same. It just has better exposure now. There's a litany of, you know, dead promotions that they can learn from. ECW and WCW mainly, too. I mean, you obviously need money, and you need, but you also need the ability to book and write. And, you know, WCW had the money, and ECW had the ability to book and write stories. So, and I think ROH has a good mix of that now being bought out. The other thing is that you have a big glaring example coming out of Orlando to show you how not to run a wrestling promotion. So I think they'll be all right.
Sir Rockin' is saying reportedly when they start on TV, they're going to start to reintroduce characters. So that means between now and then, you may have the reappearance of certain folks. People in the promotion. The problem is a lot of these guys that sometimes show up in ROH. I mean, at one point, Christopher Daniels was there. And now he's obviously occupied on TV elsewhere. The message boards went nuts with this. I know some folks at the Online World of Wrestling Genesis board were really irked by the line that he said, in our 9 years of business, there has been no better roster of wrestlers than this one to expose the ROH product to the masses. So you wouldn't have taken the roster that had Samoa Joe, Christopher Daniels, Homicide, CM Punk, Colt Cabana, Alice in Danger, Simply Luscious, Ronnie Stevens, Daphne, Roderick Strong, all those guys.
They have
around
dude,
in 05,
dude, don't take it so literal. They have to say that stuff.
I know. I'm repeating what the fans said.
Well, your fans are smart marks who take shit too literal. They have to say that. What are you going to say in a press release that you're trying to attract attention and viewership. We have some good wrestlers, but they're not better than what we had 10 years ago. You're not gonna put that in a press release.
I'm just repeating what the fans were saying. Me personally, I don't have a problem with it.
Speaking of CM Punk.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of CM Punk. Kudos last night to CM Punk. Pink shorts, yellow boots. Bravo. Well done, sir. Well done.
Yep, it was definitely an interesting evening that we will touch on in a moment or two. Yep, so as said to the fans, there will be media for this event on June 24th, and then their next pay-per-view is Best in the World 2011, which will take place at the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City. Go to ROHWrestling.com. You can read the full press release that was sent out by Kerry Silkin. Of course, there's stuff all over the place about him with that rumors that we're not going to touch on, that, you know, that's his personal life doesn't matter in the realm of things with business, so we're not going to touch it. I'm happy that the promotion found a place to go. I am unfortunate one of those folks that does, I'm part of Time Warner / Bright House Networks, so I did not get the HDNet show, and through the power of the internet, I'll be honest, I had to go surfing like crazy to try to find the product. And that stinks. You know, as you mentioned, you know, ECW, at least when ECW was around, Paul still had it, didn't he? Spike TV or TNN or whatever it was called back then, they didn't buy into the company, right?
I believe so.
They did, really. I thought they were just the part of the TV, and that was it. Yeah, because if you don't know the story on that one, buy the Rise and Fall of ECW DVD, and you can see the wonderfulness that was Paul Heyman's unfortunate dealings with the Nashville Network, as it was known back in the day. And, of course, WCW, all the fun there.
Well, it started out as the Nashville Network, and then,
mm-hmm.
then it became the National Network, I think.
Yep, big difference there. And to the fans, big difference, same old network. And as I said, I felt, having seen that DVD a few times in recent years, that's one of those, every promoter should watch that and go, wow, okay, this is what I don't want to have happen with a TV network. We are going to go ahead and take our next time out here. We're going to get Graham Cawthon of historyofwwe.com on the line. And we'll also have Brian Shields, the co-author of the humongous, if you've never seen it in the bookstore, it is a humongous book. The WWE Encyclopedia will be joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. If you've missed any of our previous endeavors, you can go to Click Wrestle on Demand, clickwrestle.com. You can find our shows there. You can also find us in the iTunes store. You can also get us through our home site. Two of our home sites, we're affiliated with wildtalkradio.com, and we're also affiliated with owwradio.com, which is a part of the massive online World of Wrestling website. We are as obsessed with wrestling as you are, and we'll be back on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
If you're looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans, then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
In case you missed it, this is what happens when WTR roasts Tim Stein.
Tim Stein is also not Jewish. It's horrible to assume the man is Jewish just because his name is Stein. You know, maybe that isn't even his real name. I mean, it's probably Goldstein or Steinberg. You don't know. He'd tell you himself if he were here tonight. And I'm told he's taking the day off for some holiday of his. I don't remember what it's called, but he pronounced it with a...
Tim really does work hard at making the WTR network what it is. Seriously, I'm not joking. Somebody pay this guy. He's like 65 years old. He needs retirement. He gets retirement. We get less Tim Stein. It's win-win, gang. Come on.
Happy birthday. You suck. You suck. You suck so bad. That's not true. You don't actually suck. You more or less blow. You've got a perfect face for gay porn, or at least a perfect mouth. That's what JJ tells me.
He's also not a pervert. The last couple of years, he had a wonderful and healthy relationship. mean, stayed with her every night, constant, wild sex. You know, it's sad when they had to break up because he couldn't find the puncture repair kit. Don't get me wrong, they tried to patch things up, but Tim just couldn't bear the sight of her anymore. Not with a duct tape holding her neck closed.
Tune in to all the great programming on the Wild Hawk Radio Network, as you never know what will happen next.
Hey, you, go! Wild Talk! Wild Talk! You want Wild Talk? This is George the Animal Steel. Hey, you go! Bye-bye.
And welcome back to the second hour of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. Our number is 267-297-1397. You can Skype Sir Rockin', like Randy did earlier when we talked to Joey Ryan, Pro Wrestling Gorilla. Once again, if you were expecting Brock Lesnar, do apologize due to circumstances beyond our control. His publisher of this new book, Death Clutch, pulled him at the last minute, and we'll try to resolve that later on. We unfortunately are here as the music was playing, the whole pomp and circumstance used to bring the one and only Macho Man Randy Savage to the ring, usually with his, onstage manager and offstage wife for many years, Miss Elizabeth, who passed away many years ago. Unfortunately, this past Friday here in Tampa, Florida, actually in Largo, Florida, Largo Seminole area, which is Pinellas County. Randy Savage passed away in a car accident. Apparently he was behind the wheel of the car, according to his brother Lanny Poffo, who actually was a guest of ours a couple months ago and made it a little difficult to even plan this all out, told TMZ that Randy suffered a heart attack while he was behind the wheel. His wife Lynn was the passenger. She was taken to Bayfront Medical Center as opposed to Largo, where Randy Savage was taken and pronounced dead. Randy was 58. He was apparently driving his 2009 Jeep Wrangler when they veered across the concrete median, through oncoming traffic and collided head-on with a tree. Florida Highway Patrol said that alcohol was not a factor. They did come out, did the autopsy, and unfortunately do not have a conclusive result. They're going to go to the toxicology, as they always do in these situations. Apparently, Jersey Girl in our chat room wants to know the condition of his wife, Lynn. Apparently, Lynn just suffered facial injuries, the normal stuff from a traffic accident. The sad part was that they just celebrated their one-year anniversary. From what we've heard from people here in the Tampa Bay area, that there were tons of stuff on the local news. People like the Cuban assassin, Fidel Sierra, came out and said that they were high school sweethearts and knew each other and had reconnected recently. We got tons of tweets from superstars, including Jay Lethal, which we'll read in a little while. But we wanted to get a historical perspective on this. Spug will stay with us. Spug had his feelings on Sunday, and he will. I'd love for him to share them with us as well here on the program. When we go to the history books, besides the folks here at Online World of Wrestling Radio, we branch out, and that's where we go to the website known as thehistoryofwwe.com comes into play, and its curator Graham Cawthon is joining us.
Hey guys, how are you?
Yep. And also, he was here a few months ago to promote a personal appearance, and we liked having him on so much, we were trying to find a way to have him back on, and I was like, I feel awkward doing this, but when you co-author the WWE Encyclopedia, and one of the major players from that before the Attitude Era ever came about happens to pass away, you get someone like Brian Shields. So thank you both for being here very much, taking your time out of your life to be with us here tonight to celebrate Randy Savage.
Oh, guys, it's my pleasure as well, and thank you for having me.
Yeah. I want to go to Spug first, because I said you fell awkward Sunday. You said that the way things went down, the way the show is presented, Russell Talk Radio, which you can find on download through the Wild Talk Radio site. Just explain your reasoning to the fans if you can. And I'm not taking offense to how you felt. Just put that out there.
What? Awkward?
No, just you felt that it was a nice thing. Explain to everybody what happened on Sunday, if you can.
Wait, I guess I'm kind of missing the question here. Do you want me to explain why Tim left or what?
Just your feelings overall on the way about everybody doing memorials to Randy Savage. The way some are doing real somber ones. We're doing one where we want to celebrate his great memories and his matches.
Oh,
and everything like that.
Okay, see that you should have gone there. Now I know.
I apologize.
Yeah. No, I hate when people, you know, open up a show after a passing. And they're like, we have terrible news to report. And it's like, yeah, the news is terrible. I get it. You know, I'm not above human compassion, but you know what? The man, if you haven't seen it, go to ESPN and look up the Bill Simmons article that he wrote about Randy Savage. Phenomenal article. And the title of it is At Its Apex, Macho Man Was Wrestling. And it's true. I went back and watched my Macho Madness, the Randy Savage Ultimate Collection DVD about four times since Friday morning. And you cannot deny that man brought us some of the most memorable moments, promos, interviews, you know, in-ring competition in wrestling history.
Yeah. And, well, Graham's, go ahead.
And just to sit there and go, oh, it's so sad. Yeah, it's sad, but damn. Celebrate what he gave us. Celebrate the memories that he gave us. Celebrate, you know, the oh yes and dig it and snap into a Slim Jim and all that stuff. Celebrate the fact that for 25 minutes, Ultimate Warrior actually looked like a real wrestler while in the ring with Randy Savage.
as mentioned, Graham's site is, with the exception of ours, actually, I'm going to say it, including ours, it is the most definitive record on World Wrestling Federation, Worldwide Wrestling Federation, the current WWE product. You guys actually had a link on your Facebook or Twitter account telling folks if you ever wanted to see the schedule that Randy Savage put through his push in 88 to the World Championship at WrestleMania 4 all the way through till he dropped the championship at WrestleMania 5. your initial thoughts and everything that's gone on over these days now.
Well, my initial thought was, of course, it was a shock just because in the past year or so, we had started to see little bits and pieces more of Randy. You know, he gets remarried, those photos get out. He does the promo introducing his definitive collection, definitive moments action figure. That gets out. That gets a huge reaction. So we're starting to see him here and there. And the consensus is we will eventually see him in the Hall of Fame. We will eventually see him on WrestleMania or Raw or something, and he will give his last hurrah. So when that didn't happen, I think that's what I guess had me thinking about that the most, is the fact that we as the fans didn't get that chance to see him one last time. I don't know how interested he was, because he'd been under the radar for the better part of 10 years now. So I think it's more us than him or the WWE, but I think the fans would have liked to see him one last time. What I think we can take comfort in is the guy was pushing 60. The guy was healthy and happy and had done all that he could have done in the business, and this wasn't a fact where he killed himself or he drank himself to death, or he did drugs, or he killed his family. It's a heart attack. It happens. So we can just, in this situation, all we can really do is say, thank you for what you provided, and we are not left with questions thinking what could have we done differently.
Some of our fans in our chat room, WWF Forever, says, I witnessed Randy Savage versus Andre the Giant at Vets Auditorium. Savage was so good, he made Andre look flexible in the ring. Jersey Girl said that actually the first time she saw Macho Man Randy Savage was at WrestleMania 7. When we talked during the week, Brian, you had mentioned some interesting stuff on Randy Savage. When you were putting this enormous, amazing book together, when you got to that section of the 80s, specifically from 85 on, after Vince went nationwide and brought people in, and for fans that aren't aware of it, Randy Savage came from the Memphis area where Jerry Lawler, he had amazing feuds with Jerry Lawler and Ravishing Rick Rude. What were your initial memories when you heard this? Did a lot of stuff come flashing back to you, just like with Graham and Spug and Ciroc and myself?
Yeah, you know, when I first heard it, I was just shocked. Over the last 8 years or so, I got really one of my dreams come true was to work with Randy fairly closely in 2003 and 2004 when I was at Acclaim and was working on the Legends of Wrestling video game series. And then I wrote both entries on him for my first two books, the 80s book in 2006, and then the encyclopedia a couple of years ago. You know, and most recently, you know, I was working with the Mattel Toy Company to launch their Legends line of awesome action figures, and I worked with the team that brought Randy and Mattel together. So all of these things just flooded my mind when I heard of this passing. I was just really in shock. And frankly, I still am.
Now, this is what bugs me. Can we bring that up, Alan? Because I really want to bring that up.
Well, I'll bring it up in a second, because there were some really amazing tweets that came out from this whole weekend. Some people that you would never have expected, like Cincinnati Bengals star Chad Johnson, also known as Chad Ochocinco.
Oh, no, tweeted. He's not Ochocinco anymore.
Oh, he went back to Chad Johnson?
He went back to Chad Johnson. He's just Chad Johnson.
Also known as Unica Sanchez.
Mm-hmm.
Dude's got more names than P. Diddy, man. It's like enough already. Well, he actually tweeted.
You know what's funny? Is you look at all the tweets this weekend from Twitter, how many closet wrestling fans there are.
Oh, yeah. There are. He actually came out and said, it deeply saddens me that one of wrestling's greats has passed. Randy Macho Man Savage was a favorite of mine in the 1980s. And it's just like, okay, let me stop the car for a second here. That Chad Johnson? Okay, I would never have pegged that one there. The more amazing thing, and we'll address something that I passed on to Spug in a moment here. Sir Rockin' and I jumped online the same time Friday morning to find this stuff online, and the first word out of our mouths to each other through Facebook were, holy crap, and then was a mad scramble to get information, and I happen to live in the county that all this unfortunately happened in, so through a couple connections we made some calls around, and like, yes, this is legit, and my jaw just was like, wait, what? There's no way. I brought it up on Sunday. My connection with Randy Savage goes back to around the time that Brian had mentioned, 03, 04, 05. Randy was actually on his own behalf. Nobody prodded him to it. The inaugural Jeff Peterson Memorial Cup took place in May of 03, and he came into the building. I was just going upstairs to do the camera stuff for that event, and I hear that voice that everybody knows, that very graggly voice, and it's like, I'm gonna go to the ring, brother, and do a thing, and then I'll be right back. And he walked to the ring, unprompted and thanked everybody for coming out to raise money for the American Cancer Society and Jeff Peterson. And it was just like, okay, wait, Randy Savage just walked in and did a thing and then stuck around and talked to the fans and everything. And through that connection, through IPW Hardcore, who became NWA Florida, I got to meet Randy Savage again because he had started MachoMan.com and he had decided through helping with Steve Kern, who at that point in 04, was not affiliated with the WWE. He was running the Steve Kern School of Hard Knocks in Tampa, which is, brought people like Lex Lovett, Steve Madison, Cedric Strong, Midian is trained in out of there. Kenzo Suzuki, when he was with WWE, would stop by, and I got a call from Steve Madison and said, you need to be at the school tonight, 6 o'clock. I'll explain everything there. Okay, awkward. Steve, what's going on? Trust me, I can't tell you about it. Just get to the school, 6 o'clock. Get there at 6 o'clock. Okay, we're waiting around. He's like, I'll tell you all in a minute. All of a sudden, this black Hummer pulls up. Out comes Randy Savage. Thank you, everybody, for being here today to help me out with this. And he was doing a Fight Club-style underground wrestling thing. And they're like, he walks up to me, thank you for being here to help me with the camera. I was like, I'm filming this thing, okay? And next thing you know, we're filming matches, and he's sitting there with Steve Kern, and he brought a full spread of food for all the wrestlers, and it was amazing. He did so much here in Tampa Bay that fans will never know about if you don't live down here. He was a big part of George Steinbrenner's foundation, his charitable organization, and the photos that I know Graham might have had up on his site and Brian's probably seen of him with the gray beard recently, he would do the Christmas stuff here in Tampa Bay. He'd go and read 'Twas the Night Before Christmas to kids, and that's just, like, amazing. Yeah, Jersey Girl just brought it up there. She's saying that, you know, how weird is it that both Elizabeth, Sensational Sherry, and now Randy Savage have passed away. And it is a bit awkward there. I want to bring this up with both Graham and Brian here, and Spug's already read this. Fans that have watched WWE TV may know the name of Big Dick Johnson. He's actually a former WWE staff writer named Chris DeJoseph, and he has taken to the Twitter like a lot of folks have done, and he actually blasted World Wrestling Entertainment and Vince McMahon for the Randy Savage video tribute, which was run on Monday Night Raw last night, and we'll cover Monday Night Raw in our next hour. He said, Vince is steaming watching this Macho Man package. The next tweet was, only in death, Macho Man was allowed back on WWE TV. Such a shame, such hypocrisy makes me sick. The next tweet is, I was always told never to mention the Macho Man ever. Next tweet was, we pitched Macho Man and then we were told never to mention his name again, quote, because it was personal. So we'll let it sink in to Spug for a minute here, and we'll go to Brian.
Oh, it's already sunk in.
Okay, well, let me go to Brian for a second, because Brian has dealt with WWE office folks in his career. Is this true or false? Do you know anything about this? Are you able to comment on this revelation from Mr. DeJoseph?
I have to tell you, I've gotten asked this question a lot over the last couple of years. I can't speak for anyone else except my own experience, and I never heard anything like that when I was doing work with WWE, whether it was as a consumer products consultant launching the Legends program or as one of the authors on books. Randy Savage is, he had a DVD that came out on him a couple of years ago. He's on the cover of the All-Stars video game from THQ. And the action figure line that you guys touched on, at the beginning of the segment, all of that stuff has to be approved by WWE.
So the areas of WWE that I've done work on, that has never come up. And the entries that I've written on him for both of my books, there was never an issue with giving him a certain amount of space or anything like that. So I haven't experienced anything like that at all. But, again, that's only in the areas, that I've done work with WWE on.
Now, 'cause Graham, we've heard stories for years that, especially your relationship with kayfabe commentaries, almost any time a timeline history of WWE is done during the Randy Savage era, be it Hacksaw Jim Duggan when he was on, most recently Greg the Hammer Valentine was on, that's a question that Sean brings up of, you know, when they address anything with Savage is, what's going on there? I know it's done in U-shoots with people. Honky Tonk Man had it asked of him. There was rumors that he slept with an underage Stephanie. Roddy Piper came out with a tweet basically saying that he slapped Vince in a bar. That's what happened. Have you ever heard of the urban legend of this?
Oh, of course, and I'm sure everyone else has too. I think when you look at what has come out with, you know, the him being on the cover of the video game and the action figure, all that's relatively recent. The DVD, relatively recent. I think there would have to be something there to have him not on be on TV in the past 10 years. I mean, he was on TNA, like, what, better part of almost 10 years ago? And all that time, he can't even do a cameo in WWE. So, yeah, I think there is probably something personal there. I think Vince will even work with Ultimate Warrior, but for whatever, and obviously, like, Warrior, Savage wasn't on for that time period. But, yeah, I think there's got to be something there. I think there's dollar signs in Savage, but it still wasn't enough for Vince to let bygones be bygones.
You've lit your cigarette and you've had a couple puffs. The floor is yours, Spug.
Vince is an idiot. Now, far be it for me to be sitting here on a microphone, you know, in BFE, Ohio, calling him billionaire, a multi-billionaire, an idiot. But, you know, you lined your pockets with that man's blood, sweat, and tears for a decade. And I said it Sunday, and I'm going to hold to it. If Hogan's not there in the 80s, Macho Man is what they build that company around. And it's still just as successful. For Vince, let's put it this way. Vince jumped the gun and put a special together and canceled a show for a double murder-suicide. And yet, this individual who was your champion and who helped build your company to the heights it was and is beloved the world over for his wrestling ability and quite possibly gave you one of the greatest WrestleMania matches ever, you can't put old shit aside for one night and induct him into your Hall of Fame and do the things that need to be done to honor him? You're a moron.
A former guest of ours, George Animal Steel, Jim Myers, did a interview with Busted Open Satellite Radio, which our friend Rebby Sky is a part of, on Sirius 92 and XM 207, was asked why Randy was not in the Hall of Fame, and this is his quote. There's been a lot said a lot of different ways, and there's been a lot of different things that are not necessarily true. I think what happened with Randy when his career was winding down in the WWF, Vince McMahon just loved Randy. After all, everything Randy had done, and he took him under his wing, and he wanted Randy, after his ring career was over, to stay with him, wanted him to be the spokesperson. He was traveling with Vince all the time. Randy was almost like a son. They were really tight. And then one day, we're at a TV meeting, and we got word that Randy, without calling Vince, had left and jumped to the WCW. I had never seen Vince McMahon broken before. He was crushed. It hurt him big time, and I don't think he's ever gotten over that. I think that's the real problem, to be honest with you. I've heard all this other stuff, and I think it's garbage when it comes to Randy and relationships with daughters and all that stuff. I don't think that's anywhere close to the truth. Interesting, because George, when we had Mr. Myers on, he was a part of WWE creative for a while there. So, I mean, to Brian, does that ring any bells in your mind as a good reason why? Because he was for, after his angle with Elizabeth ended and Sensational Sherry, he was a part of the announce crew for Monday Night Raw, the original Raw. Does that sound somewhat right to you, if you're believing in Mr. Myers' quote?
That is one of the reasons that I've heard over the years. And in working with Mr. Myers as well, in the same exact areas as I mentioned, I did Randy. I mean, he was a very big part of the backstage happenings, at WWE for, I mean, decades. So, I mean, and he's also an honorable stand-up guy. So, I mean, if he said that, I mean, I don't know if it's true, but I would hold that with validity. I guess some of this stuff I think gets very difficult. I mean, the Hall of Fame is something that both parties do have to agree to. So, and that's why it's very difficult to not really understand, why any of this stuff hasn't happened. I mean, I remember in 2000, I think it was 2002, when WWE launched their SmackDown magazine, they did a whole spread feature on Macho Man. So I don't know why it hasn't happened, or why he was, not back in WWE. I mean, I do know that, that he was one of the legends that was very smart with the money that he made, and he did not have to return to any form of wrestling unless he really wanted to. And maybe that had a part in it, I don't know. I mean, that's the stuff, guys, that I don't really like speculating on, because unless you're there, none of us really know.
To Graham real quick, Brian does bring up a good point. The majority of non-wrestling fans that I am friends with, when I told them Randy Savage passed away, the first thing they said was, the Slim Jim guy, yeah, he passed away, holy crap. Or, he didn't he do something in a Spider-Man movie? I mean, he was one of those folks that he never fully transitioned out like The Rock did or John Cena's trying to do, but that's a legacy that he's got. He made some good coin from the Slim Jim folks. If you saw the Twitter thing, that actually trended over the weekend. Not Randy Savage, but Slim Jim of all things.
Yeah, well, so did Travis Buck. Sorry, Graham.
He certainly did transcend the industry. I was actually at work. Out at lunch on Friday when I started going on Twitter and I saw what had happened. I got back to work and I actually put something on our website. I work at a newspaper. And as I'm doing that, a couple folks from the newsroom come back in. We've got a TV on. Usually we keep going CNN or one of the national news networks. And I'm on the computer and all I hear from about five different folks walking in is, holy crap, Randy Savage died. And they all knew who he was. And only one other person in there is a wrestling fan. So everyone out there knew who he was. They knew him from Slim Jim. They knew him from Spider-Man. He had such an entertaining, he was such a personality and had such charisma that, I knew who Randy Savage was before I was a wrestling fan. And that was 20-something years ago. So, yes, you don't have to just be a wrestling fan to be a Macho Man fan. And I think since his death, the wrestling fans have really
taken attention to how many folks out there, the closeted fans, or maybe the fans that, that don't watch but appreciated Macho Man, how many of those folks there are.
Our friend Jay Lethal sent us a, I had given a call to him real quick and said, you busy Tuesday night? I said, yeah, I am. I'm working a local show. I said, damn. He says, but I got something I want you to read. I'm like, okay. You inspire me more than this world will ever know. You were a tower of power that was so sweet to be sour. You were funky like a monkey every minute of every hour. For you, space was the place and time and distortion had to be. And your fans here on Earth wanted the madness for eternity. You met every challenge with fists clenched and face to face. You even fought and defeats dragons and snakes. Flying off the ropes with an elbow drop. There was no way you could ever be stopped. Identifiable by your voice alone, even dubbed the Macho King while you sat on your throne. We hung on your words with interviews, memorable and classic, and we knew it was serious when you took off your glasses. I promise not to lose you in the sands of time. For you always be that all-time hero of mine. Before I go back to everybody else, some of the other ones out here, Honky Tonk Man said Macho Man was one of the all-time greats and will greatly be missed. The one that got a lot of us choked up was from, and I make fun of him on the show all the time, and that would be WWE Hall of Famer Hulk Hogan. And I'm not going to joke about him here because this changes my view a little bit of Terry Bollea, where he said, I am completely devastated. After 10 years of not talking with Randy, we finally started to talk and communicate. He had so much life in his eyes and in his spirit. I just pray that he's happy and in a better place and we'll miss him. We miss him a lot. I feel horrible about the 10 years of having no communication. This was a tough one. I just pray that Randy's happy and he'll be in a better place and we miss him. And Spug was a part of on and off during the show Sunday night when WrestleTalk Radio did a very nice tribute, very well done tribute to the Macho Man that involved Mace, Omega, myself, Sir Rock, and chimed in. And as you mentioned, in the 80s, if it, especially from 87, 85, 86, 87, 88, 89 was that time frame, and we'll get Graham and Brian involved in this in a moment. That, I mean, I'm 36, so I was already of the proper age that I knew what was going on, and I had the monthly house shows at Madison Square Garden that I could watch, and that was the feud. Even when he was, you know, Hogan went and did his stuff with Andre at WrestleMania 3, and then you had that, all that stuff to get to WrestleMania 4, you were seeing at house shows Randy Savage versus Hulk Hogan just tearing the joint down. And we had a litany of, other feuds that were mentioned on the show. Is that the first one that came to your mind as a wrestling fan of Hogan Savage? Cause it was WWF and it also transitioned over to WCW. Was that one of the best ones that you could ever think of?
You asking me?
Yes, sir.
No, the first feud that honestly came to mind for Savage was the Ultimate Warrior. For me. That was the first feud that came to mind. And yes, it was a sham and it was rigged.
Yeah, definitely check the archive of WrestleTalk Radio if you want to know what he's talking about.
But I mean, Flair Savage transcended into WCW too. So it wasn't like it was one of the, you know, Hogan was the only feud that transcended. But you know, I mean, Savage and Steamboat at WrestleMania 3 was a great match. But to me, at WrestleMania 7,
there was no greater story told in the ring than when those two, when Warrior and Savage wrestled. From Warrior's knee pads and his tights. You know, you remember the back of Warrior's tights. means much more than this. And they had a picture of the WWE belt and Bobby Heenan sitting there and he's looking off at the off screen from the camera angle. And he's just, you know, Mr. Director, hold on a second. Point the camera over there. Is that Elizabeth? And then you see Miss Elizabeth sitting there and you wonder why the hell was she there? What was she doing there? And Sherry Martel, and I mean, it was just the ending with him and Elizabeth reuniting in the ring. That it is probably one of the greatest stories told in the ring. So that was the first feud that came to mind for me was Warrior Savage.
To Graham said, you know, you have this humongous website the fans can go to and see what was going on this day in 1987 or further back. When you look back at a lot of that stuff, what's the first Savage feud that comes to your mind that was memorable or is his greatest body of work?
I think probably, and of course, you know, Steamboat is the one everyone's going to talk about. I regard Warrior very high on that list. What I would put up there for maybe the pinnacle, and maybe what should maybe best define Savage, is Hogan. And I say that because Savage was, he brought the sports entertainment factor of the WWF. He had the colorful outfits. He was such a character. Yet at the same time, he was such a hard worker, like someone that you would find in Crockett or someone that you would find in Memphis. He was atypical for the type of wrestlers the WWF had at that time. He would bust his ass every night to put on a good match, and he had such a charisma about him, and I thought he worked so well with Hogan. I mean, from the day he came in 85, he was working with Hogan almost immediately before he even won the IC title. And then you fast forward a couple of years, he's main eventing WrestleMania with Hogan, and then they work against each other for probably 2 years straight, drawing big houses all over the country. And I thought that was really him at his peak, Hogan at his peak, Hogan doing great matches when at a time in which Hogan was not known for it. So that's immediately what comes to mind for me.
One of our chat room residents, WWF Forever, said the Mega Powers splitting up was the best storyline. The buildup in my mind, jealousy of the top two stars, the championship. A lot of wrestling fans also feel that way, Brian, because they remember going from, especially when Hogan transitioned out around WrestleMania 4, I believe was when he went to make the blockbuster of No Holds Barred, and you saw him go through, and it was one of my memories that I told fans Sunday night, was go through WrestleMania 4, and you see him take on One Man Gang, the Natural Butch Reed, Greg the Hammer Valentine, and Ted DiBiase, four completely different styles in the ring, and Savage just made it look so phenomenal.
That's one of the things that I think of. I mean, my immediate memory of Randy Macho Man Savage is the lead up to WrestleMania 3, that match on Superstars of Wrestling when he injures Ricky Steamboat with the bell. And, you know, I mean, I remember as a kid watching that in New York, and I mean, like, everyone thought Ricky Steamboat was dead. I mean, that was, like, unbelievable stuff. And so that's, you know, when I first think of Macho Man, I think of either that or the article that I read years later as a kid in Pro Wrestling Illustrated when he gave a bloodied Ricky Morton a pile driver through a table in Memphis. But I think to bring it back to a WWE discussion, you know, for me, I think of WrestleMania 4. You know, I think of WrestleMania 4 and the Mega Powers, which to this day, I'm a huge, huge Mega Powers fan. I thought it was a great idea. I thought their tag team matches were great. And it was an alliance that everybody loved and no one really wanted to see end. And, you know, and as you said, I mean, he had four different matches, four different outfits, you know, on that day. And I think that the matches that he had with, the match he had with Ultimate Warrior, I think is, as someone else said there, you know, maybe the best story in the ring. And I think that sometimes that doesn't get the due that it needs to, because people talk about Savage, Steamboat, and Warrior Hogan. So, you know, to me, it's Savage at WrestleMania 4. And I actually preferred the stuff he did with Ric Flair in WCW.
Yep. He was another one of those, as mentioned. He transitioned to WCW and had some stuff with, he went right into the feud with Flair, and there was inevitable that we're going to have stuff with Hogan, and you had some of the newer stars like DDP that came along. Bill DeMott actually had said, when I got my start in WCW, it was Randy that gave me the rub. My prayers and thoughts to the Poffo family. It was awkward as a wrestling fan, Spug, especially in that era, because, as I said, he had transitioned out of the business to the commentating table, and at one point you had him and Roddy Piper doing commentary, and on Monday Night Raw it was him and Vince McMahon and Rob Bartlett. So it was neat for him to transition to WCW, because there were so many matchups in from 94 forward that you could take Savage in, that you would never, you know, there may be some dream match stuff there. I know Mace was talking about it Sunday night that he actually liked some, as Brian said, some of the stuff that was done in WCW. When you look back at that, was that a good thing for him to do to transition in? And do you think through all his years in WCW, the Randy Savage character was handled properly, or do you think it was piss poor?
I think it was piss poor. That's just me, though. The thing that bugged me more than anything about Randy Savage in WCW was everything that I saw of him made it seem like he was just a giant walking cartoon. You know, everything was extremely over-exaggerated, the mannerisms and the way he talked. And I know that he was loud and whatnot in his promos, but just to me, he's the macho man. He's the macho king. He's a former world heavyweight champion for WWF. Former world heavyweight intercontinental champion. You know, he has had feuds with people that, you know, you would pee your pants if you met. He deserved to be treated with a little bit more respect than I thought he was given in WCW.
Yep. WWF ever in our chat room said Vince had him in cartoon type outfits near the end of his WWF run. It was almost cartoonist like. To Graham, the transition that he made, a lot of fans don't have the chance to go back. And of course WWE has been shutting down YouTube things like crazy. But, as I mentioned, most fans know his real name is Randy Poffo. His brother was Lanny. The story I've always been told is that Ole Anderson, of all people, gave him the name, that he had said he had seen Randy wrestle and said, that kid is an absolute savage out there. When you look back at his initial coming in to the WWF, especially the way they teased it on WWF TV about he's going to do a manager, and all these managers like Bobby Heenan and Mr. Fuji and Jimmy Hart, plus Johnny Valiant at the time was involved, and out comes this absolute unknown named Miss Elizabeth. That was pretty groundbreaking for WWF television to have not only a female manager, but one that she really didn't do that much at first. She was mostly used by Randy as a pawn to position herself into there. What are your thoughts on the way that he was brought in back in the 80s?
Well, I think they did a really good job with him. He kind of came in, he's kind of like, if I was to explain him to someone that had never seen Randy Savage before, Bruiser Brody dresses Elton John. And that's about as best I can do. But what I thought they did a really good job with was introducing Elizabeth. One, it's a female, and it's pretty much an all-male crowd. And when I say crowd, I mean the talent. They didn't have a female anybody. So it was kind of a precursor to what we would see years later with Sonny and stuff like that. But she was able to, even though she didn't do much, even though she didn't become too physical, the way Randy could use her would make him even more heel, whether it be, you know, the George Steele feud, or even, you know, jumping to the floor and putting her in front of the opponent. So I think she added a really unique dynamic to Randy that really we had not seen in wrestling to that point. And, of course, that kind of eventually would segue into his face turn as well.
When people think of Randy, Brian, especially we brought up the WrestleMania 7 match with Ultimate Warrior, or Warrior as he's known, and he put up two different video messages you can find online. It was with the Sensational Sherry, also known as Queen Sherry, or Scary Sherry, depending on how you look at it. A good fit in a lot of people's minds was their pairing. Some folks say it kind of may have hurt Savage having her out there, because as you saw when she managed Shawn Michaels, she wasn't afraid to mix it up with the boys, being a former women's world champion. What are your thoughts on that overall pairing that they did in a creative aspect?
I liked it. I mean, I liked it. I liked him as the Macho King. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was different. Some of the stuff towards the end with Sherry, as a fan, I just felt like it was going, it was almost like she was setting the fans up for what a Luna Vachon would be later down the road. And, even though I didn't know that at the time, I just felt like Randy Savage doesn't need that part of it. But I thought the Macho King itself was great. And one of the things I do want to mention, guys, if I may, you know, one of the other memories I have about Randy Savage is that he's one of the few legends who was as great as a hero as he was a villain. And that's one of the things that I think should also be remembered in his legacy, in addition to all of the great, you know, all of the great in-ring moments and all the great matches.
WrestleMania 7 at the end with Elizabeth, that was by far one of the greatest face turns in wrestling history. I mean, he was so vilified going into that match. Just so vilified going into that match. And then, you know, you get through it, you see him lose to Warrior, he gets his ass kicked by Sherry after the match, and then Elizabeth comes down to the ring, and the end, I mean, that's such a great face turn.
Absolutely.
And I mentioned on Sunday night, and I mentioned it before here, being a wrestling fan, I was at the quote-unquote wedding of SummerSlam 91 that set up his feud with Jake the Snake Roberts that was one of the darker feuds that you would see. I mean, the guy got bit by a cobra or whatever the heck it was, and that was pretty graphic for WWF television, even WCW television back in the day. To Graham, in our remaining moments here, Everyone's been campaigning for it for the longest time, but does WWE look like total crap if they either A, put Savage in now after he's passed away, or B, they're doofuses for putting him in the corner like they have done, unfortunately, with Bruno Sammartino, and he'll never be in this thing as long as I'm alive, saith me Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
Well, I don't know. I think they could do the same with Bruno. I think he's the only one saying that he doesn't want to be in right now. I think if it was up to Vince and Vince alone, that he would have been in a long time ago, if for no other reason to give his organization credibility. Yeah, I think it's probably likely that we will see Savage inducted next year. I think the fan interest is such that if for no other reason that they're looking at it from a financial standpoint, that would sell the Hall of Fame.
Okay, Brian.
Hold on. I got a quick question. Since Graham brought it up, I'm going to throw this out there.
Go for it.
You know, he said it would help sell the Hall of Fame. Well, we're all pretty much assuming that The Rock is going in next year in Miami. Even if The Rock's going in, you put Savage in, who's your headliner?
Ooh, that is a tough one.
I've never been to a Hall of Fame that was sold out.
Well, you would think that without Savage on the bill, you know, just hypothetically speaking, Savage not going into the Hall of Fame next year, whether he's a, you know, whether he would have been alive or not. You know, if Savage isn't going into the Hall of Fame, you would think that The Rock going into the Hall of Fame in Miami would sell out.
Like I said, I've been to a few and I've seen nothing that sold out.
Okay, so to Brian, is it a mistake? It's obvious it's a mistake that he wasn't in before he passed away. When we did our WrestleMania Memories series, which you can find on OWWRadio.com, any of the legends that we talked to, that was the first name that came out of a lot of their mouths was, I have no clue why Randy Savage is not in the Hall of Fame. So the same question posed to you, does Vince look, get egg on his face if he puts him in this year in Miami or if he never puts him in?
I just think Randy Savage needs to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know. I think it's going to be difficult. I think because the fans, especially, you know, going to the internet as a forum, I mean, I feel like people are almost going to demand it. So I think WWE in general, is just going to have a tough time this WrestleMania because, as mentioned, you know, if The Rock is going in Miami, you know, I almost think people would get annoyed more if Savage wasn't the headliner. That's just my opinion.
And do you want to share the full sentiment once again there for everyone that is tuning in? Spug, I still to this day, I've never understood how he's not in there, as you mentioned. WWE Intercontinental Champion took it from Tito Santana in the Boston Garden and then held it until WrestleMania 3 in one of the greater matches that you'll ever see anywhere. Sorry, Al Snow, but it's the best match of WrestleMania 3. And then, of course, the run with the Mega Powers and everything with Elizabeth, this match with Warrior. If it's that something petty that he left to go to WCW, Hogan's in. Nate's in. You know, a lot of guys came, saw, and left. DiBiase did it. DiBiase went for the money. So Randy said, so Hall and Nash may get in possibly someday down the road, but Randy may not. But that's gotta bother us.
What really bothers me is that you've honored all these other individuals who have helped build your company and some who didn't. Harley Race, for example, Bullet Bob Armstrong, for example.
Abdullah the Butcher.
Abdullah the Butcher. You know, they had nothing to do with the success of the WWF / WWE. You've honored all of these individuals, yet you were going to let something petty prove your idiocy to a point by allowing it to, you know, keep somebody who is probably one of your greatest assets at the time in which your company was at its apex, you know, over something stupid. Shame on you.
And as I said, it's a real shame, unfortunately, that we've had to do this. So that in the year plus that we've had this program under our control, it almost seemed for a while that, like, every week I was talking about somebody passing away, and this one's a real sad one to go with. As we close it out, pimp your site, please, Mr. Graham, because as I said, and I'm not kissing ass, it is an amazing site. If fans have never been to the history of WWE.com, give a tease as to what they can find.
You can find where the company was just about every day it's been in existence. And I know I'm summing that up in about 15 words, but it's more or less accurate.
Yeah, and you're available, I believe, through Twitter. Is it the history of WWE? Is that how folks can follow you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. There's a Facebook page. There's a blog. There's starting up my podcast again, so there's plenty of avenues to keep up with what's going on.
Yeah, and Brian, for fans that aren't aware of it, as I mentioned, he is a co-author of the WWE Encyclopedia, the definitive work. You must find it. Go to bookstores. Go to Amazon.com. Is your website still active, the Mighty Pen Sword site? Is that still going on?
It's actually once again being updated just because of some of the writing that I've done outside of WWE on Mafia 2, the video game, and another video game called Sniper Ghost Warrior. So I'm just updating it, but people could find me and follow me on Facebook, www.mightypenandsword.com, and I'm on Twitter as well at mightypen_sword, just to keep up with me and the different projects I'm working on and the history of WWE events that I host.
There you have it. Thanks to both of them, gentlemen, for being with us tonight here on All In World of Wrestling Radio. Coming up after the break, we will get into all the fun that has happened this past week in World Wrestling Entertainment. Sorry, WWE. No, I'm not supposed to use the second W word. We'll get into that. We'll get into the sudden departure of TNA's head of talent relations. That would be Terry Taylor exiting here. All In World of Wrestling Radio. The website is OWWRadio.com. The email address is radio@allinworldofwrestling.com. We'll be back after this commercial break.
What is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
You are? No, you are. It's y'all.
Say again, y'all.
You are.
What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again, y'all.
For more great entertaining moments like this, please check out the Wild Talk Radio Network.
We swear we're not insane.
At least they're not.
Do you have a business that you are looking to take online but have no idea what an HTML or a JPEG is? Do you currently have a website that is in need of an overhaul? Or do you have a website that needs updating but you don't have the time to do so? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then you need to check out WTRProductions.tk, where you can get quality web design and management at an affordable rate. Looking to get the lowdown on all the services we offer? Then shoot us off an email by checking out our contact section so that we can help you get started building your online home. WTR Productions. High quality work for an affordable rate. Built the way you want. Located at www.wtrproductions.tk.
Website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the indie scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley,
plus the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talent today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam,
Mr. Kennedy,
Christian Cage,
Brett Berry,
Janice Michelle,
Christy Hemme,
Jay Lethal,
Yesterday,
Brett the Hitman Hart,
the Sergeant Slaughter,
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man,
Paul Pony, the greatest of all time,
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman,
and tomorrow,
T.J. Wilson, Natty Neidhart,
Harry Smith, Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Hey, this is World War Animal. If you want the best and the most informative wrestling news, you listen for the Wojak, the Spud, and the Mangiazzi. This is World War Animal, and I listen. Oh, what a rush.
Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. Thanks to Brian Shields and Graham Cawtham for being here with us. As said, it was not a fun way to have them on here, but it's still nice to have them. And I promise they will come back in the coming weeks and months. Brian, we've just touched the surface with having Brian and Graham on with the knowledge that the two of them have, and they're young. That's the amazing part. They're not old whippersnappers like me walking with a cane and everything. We have tracked down our last person that's in the listings here on our credits, and that would be Jamal himself. Unfortunately, he is a semi, not sober Jamal at the moment, and this makes Spug very happy. So welcome Kevin Scott to the program. Thank you for putting down your bottle and joining us here.
I didn't put it down.
Oh, damn. He's like, I'm gonna drink my way. I know WWE programming sometimes is rough, dude, but you don't need the bottle right now.
I have a drunk black man on the phone. That's so great. And speaking of Jamal, he was looking for underoos, right?
Yeah.
He said he wanted Boba Fett underoos. Well, I found you Obama underoos. Does that work?
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
Seriously?
Yeah, democraticunderground.com had somebody's got they made a they airbrushed a pair of tighty whiteys and made Obama underoos.
Oh my
yes.
There you go. Yeah.
I'm so glad I work for a living.
Yeah, we'll go there in a moment or two. Kevin's here. He is former of the Under the Ring blog, which is Phil Strum's great thing on PoughkeepsieJournal.com, and he was with us last week when Spug and Mace were unable to be here. We had broached TNA Wrestling after their historically interesting pay-per-view. And during all this unfortunate Randy Savage stuff, this comes out. It was sent to us by Pro Wrestling Torch's Mr. Caldwell, and then was subsequently reported all over the town that the head of talent relations, the former Red Rooster, Mr. Terry Taylor, will be leaving TNA. In a company-wide statement, it was announced that a gentleman named Dean Broadhead will oversee the contractual end of talent relations. And, oh boy, this ticked off a lot of the talent from what I've heard. Bruce Pritchard, the former WWE executive and brother in love, will be handling other Terry Taylor duties. As fans aren't aware, Mr. Taylor had been part of the company since 2003, in a management role in talent relations, also did some agenting, appeared on camera, doing interviews for a while after Shane Douglas had transitioned out. And I brought up the whole, not liked thing, because he is a, worked in a road agent producer role, Mr. Pritchard has. However, he was closely one of Vince McMahon's folks, and it shifted into talent relations in WWE, and, well, kind of out of hand in some of the current WWE guys that are in TNA getting the boot. Does this shock either one of you that A, Terry had been around for that long, or B, he's getting the boot after, is he the scapegoat for a lot of the crap that's gone on? You can't get rid of Russo because he's obviously got some dirt on Dixie Carter that we're still trying to figure out. I mean, is he the scapegoat here, Kevin?
I don't know if you can call him scapegoat, but what other reason would it to make this move at this point in time? I mean, you have the rebranding of the show, the whole new look, which not a huge fan of how it is, but at least they're trying something. I love the fact that they took advantage of the whole the idea of WWE shying away from the term wrestling. And wrestling matters. Smart move. Getting rid of Terry Taylor, I don't know how much of a difference that's going to make. I still see that there's a whole bunch more people in that company that need to go. I don't really think that anything's going to change majorly because of getting rid of one person. And I don't know if they've dug themselves such a hole at this point that there is a turning things around. I don't know what they can do.
Sir Rockin says he would like the drunk man to speak louder if possible. Whoa.
I will try my best to speak louder.
You're out looking for women, aren't you, while you're doing our show? Damn you.
Yeah, we
teased it with Brian Shields. He's like, I don't blame him if he's out looking for women. It's a great night on Long Island, and I need to get out there myself.
There's no such thing as a great night on Long Island.
Hey, as a former resident, I resemble that remark. for fans that, well, let me ask Spug this, because I know Spug, for fans that have never listened to our show before, is not the biggest fan of TNA wrestling. But I'll ask the same thing to you. Is this a scapegoat move that, you know, as I said, can't get rid of Russo. He knows where the bodies are buried. He knows something that somebody knows that Dixie and Jeff won't get rid of him. So, as the old adage used to go in sports, can't fire the players, fire the coach.
I don't know, dude. I don't know.
Here.
I don't know. And by the way, Jamal, I found your Boba Fett underwear.
Oh yeah,
you're
look
awesome.
Out.
Thank you.
Too bad you're not five anymore, but I found you Boba Fett underwear.
I was going to say something horrible. Never mind.
This girl just said it.
You know where I was going. Yeah. Sorry.
I texted her. I said, they're epic. He said, either that or he's looking for gay men. I'm like, wait, that's CB radio. Or that's Anything Goes with Cindy Sin. That's not here.
No, but you're going to fire him. I wonder. I really wonder if this is kind of punishment for the whole Jay Lethal thing.
It could be. Well, there's also stories going around that his wife has gotten a recent diagnosis of cancer and he's stepping away to be with her. And if that's the case, that's great. I wish Mrs. Taylor nothing but the best. I hope she fights it and wins. If it's not, and he's put under, like you said, for the lethal firing, and as we mentioned last week and a week before, Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff were not happy that Jay Lethal was let go. And we were really expecting him on TV recently, especially if you watch Impact Wrestling this week. I can't call it TNA Impact. I may get a letter from Jeremy Borash going, that's the wrong name, dude. When you watch this show, Sorokin and I were chatting during it Thursday night. The first thing that came out of my mouth was, holy crap, it's Thursday night SmackDown in Orlando.
Thunder.
And you brought up Thunder. WCW Thunder. That's exactly what it looked like. I expected to see Scott Hudson sitting next to Tanay at some point. Now wait, that's Taz. Of all the color schemes you could pick here, you went with the blue and the white?
Well, they steal anything else from them, why not?
Yeah. Yeah, we actually, and of course this was supposed to be Mick Foley came out and gave this grandiose speech about wrestling matters here. So what do? We start to show the promo. Heaven forbid we start with wrestling, and that would be the Vanilla Midgets, as Eric Bischoff's been calling Brian Kendrick, The Amazing Red, The Buck Brothers, Generation Me, which led to a humongous immortal fortune X Division brawl, which set up matches later in the program. Your knockout tag team champions, Sarita, Rosita, Madison Rain, were defeated by an interesting trio of Tara, Miss Tessmacher, great intro, bad wrestler, and Knockouts champion Mickey James. My prediction came true. I joked around during the production chat on the night that we watched the Sacrifice pay-per-view. Oh, I'll read that in a second. And I joked that, no, of all the people to be the X Division champion, I want Abyss to be the X Division champion. Well, sure enough, Vince Russo and Creative were reading our private chat during the Sacrifice pay-per-view, and what the hell happens? Frankie Kazarian loses the World X Division Championship to Abyss. You have Amazing Red getting destroyed by Samoa Joe in record time. Crimson, of course, comes out and saves his brother. You know, like how Kane and Undertaker are brothers. We had AJ Styles and Tommy Dreamer talking, which led to a full-out brawl with Daniels, Bully Ray, Tommy Dreamer. We already have now a second match set up for Slammiversary. Not only will you see the world champion Sting versus Mr. Anderson, you are now going to see Jeff Jarrett and Kurt Angle again. This time, no children are on the line. A wife, ex-wife's not on the line. One of these two men will be the number one contender to the TNA World Heavyweight Championship, and one will walk out with Kurt Angle's medals that he won in the 96 Atlanta Games. And in the most amazing match to end this program, Generation Me, oh sorry, it didn't end the program because there was another one after this. Generation Me was defeated by the world-class tag team of Matt Hardy and Eric Bischoff, who you can hear on other radio shows with barbecue sauce involved. In a handicap match that was set up by the powers that be, Velvet Sky actually defeated Angelina Love and Winter, only to be attacked by the returning ODB, who didn't look ODB-like. As I said, if you didn't want to watch wrestling, this was definitely the show for you, because you ended this show with promos. That would be Eric Bischoff. Showtime Eric Young involved in a deal with TNA television champion Gunner, stealing his belt, da-da-da. Ric Flair and Bobby Roode had a great promo, till the point where Immortal injured Bobby Roode. And Sting had a face-off in the ring. Yes, Mr. Anderson was dressed as the late 1980s, 1990s Sting. And damn, didn't he look good. Sir Rockin', our god of internet radio, brings up the point. This past Thursday's TNA Impact Wrestling had a grand total of 20 minutes and 59 seconds of in-ring action. No more than usual before the Wrestling Matters rebranding. So sorry, Vinny Roo, for us counting the seconds and minutes in a fake wrestling show once again. We will be seeing, before we go to the gentlemen that are sitting patiently as I ramble, this coming Thursday on Impact, announced during the show by Mike Tenay and Taz, you will see Kurt Angle take on Rob Van Dam. The tag team of AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels will take on Tommy Dreamer and Bully Ray. Not exactly the way I want to get my Wrestling Matters product out there, Kevin, but then again, when Mick Foley's taking to Facebook and Twitter and mocking live house show crowds in upstate New York, what do you expect?
Yeah, the Foley thing, I can understand where he was coming from just in terms of it was a funny joke, but really? What can you possibly be thinking in terms of that? And why isn't TNA cracking down on what their employees are saying online? That's absolutely amazing. As far as the actual wrestling, yeah, they really have to figure out a way to get the, let's say, younger guys, into the spot where people actually want to see them perform, as opposed to watching the same matches that we could have seen maybe a decade ago.
WCW.
God bless you, sir. And then
Sorry.
Some.
Sorry, okay. It's the season for allergies. I apologize.
No.
It's quite all right. But, I mean, this is just, it's nothing different than what we've seen before, other than you made it blue and Sin Cara's not in the ring. It's just, oh, here it is. He was talking about how The Rock...
They were talking about the I Quit match between Cena and Miz, and The Rock made a tweet about how he bashed Foley's head in 14 times.
Yeah, the quote was from The Rock, in the famous I Quit match, I handcuffed Mick Foley and bashed his face 14 times with a steel chair. He bled. I won.
And Sir Rockin found us the quote back from Mick Foley, which is, maybe so, but Tuesday later, I trapped The Rock under a pallet of beer kegs to win the WWE strap in an empty arena match, aka TNA house show. Now be aware, TNA went north, and I mean way north, Miss Tessmacher, to Plattsburgh, New York, which if you've never seen a map of New York, start down where Kevin and I lived on Long Island, along with Brian and Phil Strummer in the day. Go all the way up to the Canadian border. That's Plattsburgh. I think except for Eskimos and a few penguins, nobody's up there. But a great place to run your TNA wrestling event. As said, we already got two matches for the June 12th Slammiversary. To Kevin first. Dear God, man, I thought this feud was done. Do we really need Jeff and Kurt again? I'm going to cry for a moment.
What's worse, that one or Lawler Cole?
I don't know. We'll talk about them in a minute or two. I mean, we've already had children on the line. We had Joni Lauer mixed in here. Now we've got gold medals and an number one contendership. that if Sting or Anderson win the belt, you're going to get one of these two at the July event.
I'm cringing already. It's just from a, yes, they have some kind of, I don't know if you would call it charisma or whatever it is. They do work well together. I will give them that. It is interesting at times before it goes way over the top, before it goes on way too long and it gets really, ridiculous, but as a TNA way. They're so handcuffed by the fact that they only have a few guys who can make things interesting, and this is why this has been going on for so damn long, because they really can't throw that many people in that spot. As far as all the stipulations they've had, it started off where they had this great real-life situation they play off of. You completely ruin it by just jumping into the crazy train real fast, and instead of having it, you know, where they trying to use their legitimate feelings and playing off of just that, you have the stupidity thrown in, you have the bad gimmicks, you have the ridiculous stipulations. I guess it was only a matter of time for the Olympic gold medal was thrown in there. It is Kurt Angle after all. But they really need to do something different. I'm now completely sick of this, and Kurt Angle is probably one of the reasons why I continue to watch TNA for as long as I did.
Yeah, I mean, just Spug, before we wrap our TNA chat up here, great way to push your talent. You know, I'm fine with them, you know, rehashing certain stuff, but how many pay-per-views in a row do you go before the rest of the show gets, you know, totally nauseated? The fans are ready to commit Harry Caray as Kevin did back in the day.
I just want to know is when he was committing Harikari, if he had a copy of Twilight by him. Oh, yeah, Kevin.
Reed?
Oh, oh, we yeah. went there. No, oh, yeah, are we Kevin. Talking the DVD or are we talking the book?
Oh, no. His purple boa, big sunglasses, copy of Twilight.
Someone's doing a little Facebook stalking.
I am doing a little I did Facebook stalking a long time ago, but I keep going back to that picture because it makes me cry on the inside.
Is it one of those he has to surrender a man card because he's read Twilight?
Anybody.
So if you see the picture, no, my man card's intact.
Okay.
Why are you reading Twilight?
Why am I having a picture taken of you reading Twilight while I'm on toilet?
I wouldn't touch the book Twilight with a 10-foot fucking pole attached to Oprah Winfrey's dick.
Whoa. Save that for after Oprah's finally done. We'll do that next week. We'll do a Bash Oprah episode or something about how we should have Oprah's hour.
I don't know how long they go with this. I wish, to be quite honest, we could get, like, Samoa Joe versus Kurt Angle. Or, I mean, I know we've seen it, but goddamn, those were good matches. Or, you know, Ken Anderson versus Kurt Angle. Again, seen it. Great matches. Do I really need to see anybody, according to, I believe his name's Mike Adams, you know, who was one of the head guys in WCW for a very long time. A guy who smashed a million guitars and never drew a dime.
I think a certain guy named Bischoff said that on a DVD. Which is kind of amazing.
Well, I think his last name was Adams. He was, his dad was somebody big. I can't remember who. But he was in WCW. He was a head guy in WCW for a long time. And he said that on the Rise and Fall of WCW DVD.
And we actually put it to the numerous TNA, the Online World of Wrestling Facebook pages. I basically asked the fans after the event, do you like the new Impact Wrestling look and style, or do you wish TNA left things alone? Alan Fiske said, I like the new look a whole lot better. Ilu Jama said, I still love to see the six sides back. Other than that, the new look is nice. I like the catchphrase, wrestling matters here. Hope it can be fulfilled decently. There's a group for Online World of Wrestling, and then there's an actual page for it, so bear with me as I find everything here. Because unfortunately, Randy Savage stuff slammed the page horribly. Here we go. And I lost it. Yep, so, yeah, a lot of folks, chimed in with it. And it's a rough patch. Brian Shields on Facebook said he was really appreciative of being with us, and I'm happy that he was here. And he likes our show. Yes. Apparently people in Nashville and Stanford like our show too, which is always fun. Yeah. And here's another one I'd asked. Tom Hanskin said, no, it still has the Russo stench around it. Michael Barton left a humongous message, which I'll post later on the Online World of Wrestling stuff. Brian McDonald said, bring the six sides back. Tony Schwartz said, new look was needed. Kyle Frazier, new look is good. Now they need to stop the goofy storylines, like putting people in trances to wrestle and etc. and get back to professional wrestling. Tony Schwartz said, I've been saying that to years. Agents are half the problem. Be creative. There is talent. Brian McDonald actually brought up maybe time for Ric Flair to go. Ooh. Don't know about that one. I don't know about Nate exiting. I still say it's Vinnie Rue. It's gotta be Vinnie Rue to get him out of here. And we'll move on because thanks to Paul Heyman and WWE, my show was written a long time ago. Paul Heyman, thanks to the wonderful world of Twitter, made headlines and made controversy, as Paul always did. Amid reports, as we had mentioned weeks ago, that CM Punk is happy behind the scenes in WWE and is considering leaving when his contract expires, Paul Heyman, through Heyman Hustle, which is his Twitter, said, I'm sure he will get heat for me saying this, but CM Punk is still the most underutilized talent on the WWE roster. And I apologize to CM Punk for the heat he'll get, but come on already. Punk is the best heel in the business today. Wake the F up. It's amazing to me, and not in a good way, that WWE does not see how CM Punk has brought out the best in every opponent. Punk apparently caught wind of Paul's rant and responded with, oh, you know me. If I don't have heat, I'm doing something wrong. Keeps me warm. Steve Austin, who has exchanged words with Punk on Twitter in recent weeks, quoted Paul Heyman and said, agreed. He's gone from somewhat babyface to the Straight Edge Society, which is the Second City Saint, somewhat in ROH back in the day. Then he was injured and doing commentary with Josh and everyone else. A Diet Coke got spilled, and boy did that piss him off. Had some great stuff with John Cena, as we mentioned, Spug, and next thing you know, it's the new Nexus. Agree with what Mr. Heyman has to say here? Disagree? Meh? As Mace would say?
No, he is one of the best heels in the business today. He absolutely is. And how do you not, you know, have a good match with CM Punk? I don't understand how you cannot have a good match with CM Punk. It's almost impossible.
agree, disagree, or meh on this one, Kevin. Is Punk, do you agree with Mr. Heyman? The Punk is underutilized. I mean, the guy's had multiple world title runs. He was really close to winning the tag titles on Sunday, which we'll address in a moment. If you've got creative, is he underutilized? Is he right where he should be on the cusp of mid-card main event?
This is going to sound a little strange. I completely agree with what he's saying. I think underutilized might not be the right word, but he's definitely should be, at the very least, something that they're focusing on the next upcoming time.
Into the speaker, my friend.
Sorry, if you go back into the Ring of Honor days, his work there was phenomenal. He was probably the best heel of that era in terms of as soon as he made the turn when he won the title, and he turns back on the fans' promotion, it was money. It was absolutely what ROH needed at the time, and it showed that Punk had a lot to offer the business. And when you mentioned the new Nexus angle, that moment on Raw, that got me back to wrestling, pretty much. So I would like to see that, I would like to see Punk, used the way he should be used. So I guess if you want to say that he's going to utilize that fashion, I'll go with that.
Yeah. Before we even talk pay-per-view, we talk Raw. This was another item that came across the news wires that WWE news sources are reporting that the company is now requiring all WWE superstars to have medical insurance, which has to be paid by them. WWE will still keep paying for surgeries and medical bills for injuries that occur during their work time and will also cover the necessary rehab that will follow. WWE superstars and divas keep getting paid while they're injured, but obviously miss out on shared gate money and other incentives that come with the job, hence the phrase, downside guarantee. As someone that's a competitor in the ring and also in the MMA training...
I haven't done MMA training in a while.
Does this bother you, or is this par for the course in the wrestling industry that at that level, you get hurt, too bad, it's on you?
I don't necessarily know if I'm in that boat, because I have medical insurance, so... I mean, it was never really a big deal. I'm a firm believer that there needs to, that if the WWE is going to continue to call themselves entertainment, then somebody like SAG needs to step up and say, well, you're part of us now.
I want their insurance, Kevin. I don't know about you, but I want some SAG insurance. Those people get amazing stuff.
Oh, in a heartbeat. I have no sort of people who are members of SAG, and even still, they still have problems in terms of being handled correctly. Sometimes it does benefit them, sometimes not. But as far as the forcing the independent contractors, I have mixed feelings on that. I'm glad they're at least saying, hey, look, you need the insurance. By the same token, you should probably be providing it for them.
Yeah. Before we get into Raw and Tough Enough, we will broach really quick the Over the Limit pay-per-view. We had R-Truth defeat Rey Mysterio in a very entertaining contest that led to stuff that happened on Monday Night Raw. Ezekiel Jackson defeated Wade Barrett via DQ, so belt stays with Wade Barrett. In the mood lighting match of the night, Sin Cara defeated Chavo Guerrero, and wow, what a botched finish there. I normally don't catch that stuff because the mood lighting helped me go, wait a minute. He just dropped Chavo. Lovely. We had WWE World Tag Team Champions, The Big Show and Kane defeat Mace and Ryan, and CM Punk, who not only had Macho written on his wrist tape, but he did go for the Macho Man elbow, unfortunately miss, but still in the spirit, he went for it. The Bella Twins, even though Brie Bella is the Divas Champion, defeated Kelly Kelly using the twin magic. And what many are considering, the folks that emailed us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com consider the best match of the night. Randy Orton retained his World Heavyweight Championship, defeating Christian. Michael Cole, as we found out, tried to get out of the match with a doctor's note, which is original. However, the referee said, "I got your doctor's note right here," and Jerry Lawler did what all of us wanted to do, which was kick the crap out of Cole for several minutes. And then we had not only Eve Torres come out, not only did we have Jim Ross and a bottle of barbecue sauce come out, but we had WWE Hall of Famer Bret the Hitman Hart lock in the sharpshooter and make Michael Cole, lick barbecue sauce off Jerry Lawler's toes. And in a match that brought a lot of anger on Wrestle Talk Radio, WWE Champion John Cena defeated The Miz and Alex Riley. Now, if fans didn't watch the match, we had another Dusty Rhodes style finish where Cena, in quotes, quit. But referee Mike Chioda found Alex Riley's iPhone that had a recording of John Cena from promo on Monday Night Raw saying, "I quit," and restarted the match. The Miz loses by tapping out to the STFU on the rampway. And it bothered a lot of us because the match, thanks to Graham and his site, he timed out all the stuff. The match timed in at 26 minutes, and if you watch it, and Spug did, I don't know if Kevin did, but if Spug did, you watch 25 minutes of John Cena getting the annihilation of a lifetime. And someone had actually joked around that Jesus in the Passion of the Christ didn't take as bad a beating as John Cena. And yet survived magically. Mace had brought it up, Omega had brought it up, that I even brought it up, that I don't think, other than when he's selling t-shirts or his movies, John Cena knows how to sell. As someone who's been in a ring and competed, you had mentioned Sunday you disagreed with us, so for the fans that did not listen, explain your feelings on this world championship match.
I haven't got to see the whole thing yet. I've only been described what happened. What bothers me, what really bothers me is how everybody goes to blaming John Cena. You know, oh, Cena can't sell. Oh, typical Superman. Oh, Marky Mark. Shut the hell up. The dude does hundreds of appearances for charities every year. He is the face of a company. It's the same thing that Hogan did in the 80s. If you want to bitch about it, bitch, but at least be constructive. I'm just tired of hearing people bitch about Cena to bitch about Cena because they have nothing better to do.
Well, my feeling was, and I said on Sunday, and I'll say it here again, I personally wasn't attacking John Cena as a person for the way the match was structured out. There's road agents, producers involved, Stephanie McMahon, Levesque's involved in the creative sense here. But to Kevin real quick, and we'll go back to Spug in a moment, you know, I joked around on Facebook that the real Superman would not have been able to make Superman John Cena say "I quit" on Sunday.
Well, I actually agree with the sentiment in terms of it's not so much either the wrestler himself or even the character per se that's the problem. It's that they're marketing him towards kids. They need obviously a Superman type character to give them in order to make them care to watch a show. If they presented something in terms of vulnerability, that's great for the storyline, that's great for the actual wrestling, But kids don't want to see the heroes vulnerable. They want to see the guy walk into the ring, beat up, you know, 6-7 people at a time, be able to do the near impossible, because that's what kids like. They enjoy it. They don't want, you know, those gray areas where you don't know what's going to happen. It's just in terms of, like, when you watch an 80s action movie, you know Schwarzenegger's going to win at the end. It's that kind of thing. Personally, I do respect John Cena a lot. I really wish the character was completely different, but I understand why they do the things they do, even though it's not really a great thing for the business.
One of the funnier parts of the match when you do watch it, Spug, is Miz actually on the guardrail area ringside talking and interacting with John Cena fans and tells them, you need to tell him to say I quit before I do horrible stuff to him. And the fans, the kids were just, nope, not going to do it. He's going to kick your butt. And I was like, that's different for an I quit match. You don't see that. And I thought that was very creative on their part. I don't know if that was an audible call by Miz, if that was Cena telling him, go talk to those kids. I know they're my cousin's sister's brother's former roommate. They'll love it. I just thought that was a neat touch to the match.
Anytime you get the crowd involved, it's always good, man. I mean, that's the best part.
Yeah. And as said, it was Over the Limit, Seattle. The next pay-per-view is Capital Punishment, June 19th, Verizon Center, Washington, D.C., and some guy named Obama's on the poster. I think he's going to be a big guy somewhere in the future here. I don't know if we're going to see an Obama impersonator. Is that maybe how they bring Abraham Washington back up? Let him be Obama for a thing? God, I hope not.
Just have The Rock do it.
Oh, sure, why not? If you've been following Tough Enough, we are getting really close to the end. So close that they were here in FCW this past week, filming some stuff that will appear in the show in the next couple weeks. The kids got to interact with James Rodet of the USA Network program Psych. Great cross-branding there. He was involved in them going on a guided tour of Hollywood, and Jeremiah fared the best of everybody in that one, considering, as Bill DeMott said, I didn't learn crap about Hollywood, but he was very entertaining. One of the stars of WWE, the one and only The Rock, worked with the kids on promos. And they were asked to cut a promo on Bill DeMott, who almost looked like he was falling asleep in the ring. And of all the kids to win, AJ wins. But when it got to elimination time, it didn't save him. And the sprained ankle of Christina Crawford, Alicia Fox's real-life sister, yeah, bro, kayfabe, deal with it. Neither one was saved. The funniest part of all this to me, Spug, is the fact that Christina did decent in the bus stuff. Yeah, she wasn't great, but she wasn't horrible
she
like
was
Andy
terrible.
Was.
No, she was terrible on the bus.
Well,
she was pointing out McDonald's and a building. She had no clue what she was pointing out. She was terrible.
Andy was lost too, Rock. Andy was totally lost.
But
too.
She was far gone.
Yeah, but the point I want to bring to Spug is, and to bring to you and Kevin is, for fans that aren't aware of it, as I mentioned, she is Alicia Fox's sister. Before she was signed to do Tough Enough, she was in WWE Developmental. She was a part of FCW. And when I was covering FCW for the while there, at least once a week, if not twice a week, during their training, they do promos. So I don't understand how this girl, who is undevelopmental and has a sister that's in the company, could deliver a promo that I think your daughter, Spug, or Kevin's niece could have done better in. So you've got now Andy, Luke, and Jeremiah as your final three. If you had started this competition, would you expect those three to be there, to either one of you?
I believe my winner was Luke. That's who I called. So, yeah.
Were, to Kevin, are you, were either of you surprised at how Andy was so bottled up and it took Austin getting in his face to finally get him to pop? It almost reminded me of Matt Cross being so sheepishly and then all of a sudden he erupted and was like, hey, I like this guy now.
Yeah, Matt Cross was my horse in the race, and I was kind of shocked how quickly he went out. For me, honestly, even with Rock and my love for Psych, it was enough to make me watch Tough Enough. I wasn't able to get into the show from almost the very beginning. I have kind of followed a little bit. I see what's been going on. I just don't feel anything for any of them. So it's nothing really. I guess surprised me in terms of when they don't succeed or if they do. It's just something I really sadly don't care for.
Yep, and as you see, I believe it's the Nassau Coliseum event is when they will be announcing the final winner. God, I hope it's not that Jeremiah kid because my daughter's got more ring time than he does.
Yeah, but he fought in the UFC.
Well, he did legitimately, or is he just MMA guy?
He's MMA guy, I mean, but still.
And he's the first legit MMA guy to cross over. Once again, let's smack people around. The basic highlights, if you watch Monday Night Raw, I'm not going to go over everything, but I will say you have new tag team champions, and that would be David Otunga and Michael McGillicuddy. Ricardo Rodriguez sucks behind the wheel of a car. If you don't believe me, ask the Big Show's knee. You had Kofi Kingston defeat Drew McIntyre, and apparently now Tamron Terrell is going to try to defeat Drew McIntyre in divorce court, if you follow what she says on Twitter.
Didn't see that one coming.
Not one bit. Not one bit at all, Kelly. You had Bret Hart return for another night where you had Rey Mysterio and John Cena defeat R-Truth and CM Punk in full Macho Man regalia. Short of coming out in the robe, the headband, but the shorts, the boots, all of that fun stuff. And Alex Riley goes postal, kids. Riley snaps. And Michael Cole apologizes, and all is forgotten. Kevin, are you freaking kidding me?
That was actually classic. They really had nowhere they could go with that. So I mean, I can't criticize too much, but the way they did it is just unbelievable.
Oh, I mean, does this just bother you, Spug? That all these this is TNA style stuff. It's like, all right, feud. Ah, the hell with it. Everybody be friends again.
Whatever. What else are they gonna do? What else are you gonna do with Cole? You can't. You have to have him swallow his pride and apologize. You can't do anything else.
I want him to go away. Be gone. Go back to being a war correspondent as you claim you were. Well, he was. He did. He covered the Clinton fund in Bosnia and Herzegovina back in the day. So yeah, I guess Big Show gone for a little while. The biggest shocker apparently was the way that, I can't believe I'm about to say this. Mace warned me. Mace said to me when he said, did you watch Raw yet?
What did I tell you? What did I tell you?
Huh? You warned me about Monday Night Raw and saying, don't watch, it was almost like the Raiders of the Lost Ark thing. Don't look, close your eyes, especially when Awesome Kong Karma hits the ring. And we apparently have an answer to why Karma walked to the ring during the eight lady match, which was Kelly, Beth Phoenix, Gail Kim, Eve versus the Bella Twins, Melina and Maryse, where she basically suffered a nervous breakdown. Now there's numerous stories going. Sorokin found one of them that basically says
she's out 9 months. And you can speculate from that point.
Because that's all that they're saying right now. Now
there are multiple. I mean, there's multiple reports. One, pregnant. Two, a heart issue. Three, a back issue.
Now, I can say from having met Kia at a couple of events, she relocated from Florida to Boston, and she did hint that, I'm in love, I met a guy, and I was like, far out, good for you, I'm happy for you. But if it was a back or if it was a heart, let's say if it's the heart for a second here, we'll speculate there with Dr. Mace. If it was a heart, you know, MVP had Wolf, something syndrome that they caught and they got him under control. Wouldn't you, as WWE, when you're brought in, I mean, look what they did with Nigel McGuinness. They, you know, bad knees, we don't want you. Wouldn't you have done a full workup on her before you even brought her on the TV?
Well, considering that they've all, well, the reports have come out lately that they want all wrestlers to carry their own insurance, you'd figure a medical check would be a part of something you'd have to do before signing the contract. Which these things would have been caught out. Personally, I'm probably thinking we're going to see Baby Kong.
Yeah, that's the way it's looking.
Well, good for her. I'm all for that. She's a wonderful person, and hopefully that works out for her. Before we let everybody go, I want to get everybody's take on the actual tribute video they played for Randy Savage that I believe had... Oh, who the heck was the band? Was it Coldplay?
It was Coldplay.
Yeah. Since you brought it up, your thoughts on the way it was handled? Was it handled right? Wrong?
It was handled probably the only way it could be. We all know, we don't know exact reasons why, but we all know that there has been some kind of an issue between, Vince and Savage for God knows how long. I think the thing that got me wasn't so much the video, but Lawler talking later in the show about how Savage was a definite Hall of Famer. I don't know why he was able to get away with saying that. Granted, that's probably how he feels, and like, really, what are you going to do to Lawler after he's already said it? But it was just it was a little awkward. For the most part, in terms of that, because we all sat there wondering how are they going to, you know, mention it? Was it going to be a quick screen flash? You know, the fact that he got a 4-minute video tribute, that kind of just says some things. But as a longtime fan, it kind of sucks that he finally got back on TV after he died.
Yeah, to Spug. Thoughts on the video package? Was it done right or wrong?
Well,
in your mind, was it? Would you? We talked about it Sunday. Would you have liked to have seen a full 2-hour celebration? And you didn't, unfortunately. You saw a flash of it. So,
yeah, no, I think WWE handled it poorly. I really do.
Did Mace get to watch any of Raw last night?
I warned you about what was happening on Raw. What do you think?
He caught you there, Alan.
That was a lead-in for you to talk, dude. Not about whether you are. I mean, your thoughts on the
you
pack
You asked
itself.
The question, I answered it.
All right.
Give me a break. I've just been grilled by government agents. Okay?
Oh, that'll be saved for OTL if he's around for OTL tomorrow night.
They might have their spy satellites on me already. I'm getting a bit paranoid. But in terms of the Savage tribute, I would have liked to have seen more, and especially the fact that they waited until just before the main event to play it, I thought was a bit of a shot to the nuts. You know, it would have been nice to have done the traditional. You lead into the show, you have the graphics, you have 10 bells, then you lead into Lawler talking about Savage, show the clip, and in that clip you have, you know, current generation stars, any legends that you can get a hold of. Share a couple of quick thoughts, you know, dedicate, give us half an hour, give us something to really show that the WWE gave more of a crap than it looked like they did. Which, to be honest, wasn't much.
Yeah, it almost looked like that was know, they just pulled stuff from the DVD and said, all right, here you go.
In all fairness, how much of a hypocrite would Vince look if they actually did the whole 9 yards?
I don't think he would have looked like a hypocrite at all. It would have shown that the guy at some point was willing to bury the hatchet. This,
I think
was somebody sitting behind him with a shotgun going, put this on the air or else I'm going to blow the back of your nuts out or something. This seemed like he was forced to do it instead of he wanted to do it, which is a real shame.
All reports said it was Vince McMahon's idea to do the tribute itself, the video itself. He was the first one to make the call to put it on. That's what reports say.
Well, reports also say that, you know, we're the greatest show in the history of... Oh, wait, we are the greatest show in wrestling besides Wrestle Talk Radio on this network.
Just ask BG James.
Damn right. We're possibly going to be having him back in August for the next event that the promotion in Nashville will have going at the fairgrounds. We're going to keep Kevin, but he's going to stay silent for a moment because we need to pimp. Will OTL be on tomorrow night, and will you be with them? Or has the government already low-jacked you and won't let you talk?
To my knowledge, we are doing a show. I shall be there. The results for this job interview that I had this morning will not come through for probably about 2 weeks to a month from what I'm guessing. So, yeah, we'll be talking geeky stuff. I actually am going to pimp a comic book store that I went to. So I'm trying to, like, get advertising out of them. You know, free plugs! Yay! Woohoo!
Shameless promotion.
Yeah. So yes, shameless plugs on OTL tomorrow night, 9 PM Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Located at www.wildtalkradio.com.
And you can also eventually sometimes find him doing a Bashing at the Books podcast if he manages to get out and find the books.
Well, given the fact that I may have a new comic book store, that might be likely.
But Saturday we'll be talking mixed martial arts, UFC pay-per-view this Saturday night. So we'll be on there talking about that.
Is the Baby Eater guy on? Is this the Rampage event?
He's in the main event.
Alright.
Yes. So, check
so
it
I get
out.
To listen to you talk about baby eating and stuff.
Yes.
Quentin Rampage Jackson, also known as the Baby Eater by me and Spug, might eat a few babies on his way down the octagon and then punch out a grandma just for fun. Find out what else we have to say when you listen to Tab House Knockouts on Saturday.
9-ish. And then midnight-ish, CB Radio.
Yeah.
Which leads us to Wrestle Talk Radio Sunday night, 10 PM Eastern. We'll be talking more about Karma. And, I don't know, wrestling stuff. Tune in.
You got the managers thing going, don't you?
Oh, yes, the great debate. The greatest manager of all the times. It's a sham. It's a rig. Who knows? Tune in. Sunday night, 10 PM Eastern.
It wasn't a rig.
Sham, it's a rig.
Gimmick infringement. Once again, very sorry about the Brock Lesnar issue. None of us are happy about it. They will get to the bottom of it. Thanks to Joey Ryan for taking time on his way to the LA Angels game. ProWrestlingGorilla.com is the site for all that stuff. The history of WWE.com is Grant Cawthon's site. Brian Shields, Mighty Pen Sword, I believe, is his Twitter name. You have to write Mighty Pen _Sword. Mace is the Mace thing. Spug is Tapout2KO. And it's also at Wild Talk Radio is the Twitter. Kevin is not Jamal on that. He is Kevin _K_Scott. And he'll be heading to the most local AA meeting after this. Thanks to Brad Dyken, Jason Dedrich, Tim Stein, everyone for listening. Got a couple guests in the works for next week. Not going to leak them yet because look what happens when I do that. So thanks for joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio, part of the Wild Talk Radio Network, and we'll see you next week.